With a belly full of tacos, it's time for the Dirt Life Show.
Yeah. We'll call this episode 109 of the Dirt Life Show. Baja 1000 recap show. This is a stacked show. Stacked. Man. And when I say stacked, I mean stacked. We have all kinds of people coming up. We're going to have interviews with Max Eddy, Phil Blurton, Caden McCachran, RJ Anderson, Joe Winding, who's part of Toby Price's team, Rob McCachran, maybe Dave Cole, in the RS1, Jeff Proctor of Honda, and possibly Brandon Sims, man. So please jump in, ask all the questions you want, and have a good time with us. I'm going to bring our first guest, Max Eddy, on here, and we're just going to jump right into it, man. The 2021 1000 was insane. 1,227 miles. 1,227 miles, man. That is just, oh my God, it was insane. It was just so crazy to see everybody do all that stuff. We're trying to get Max on here in just a second here. Looks like he's going to join us right now. You guys can probably see. I wonder if Max's internet's okay. Oh, dude, KMC all over the place tonight. Max Eddy, what's up, buddy?
How's it going, George?
Oh, dude, doing pretty good. I don't know about you, but I'm a little tired. Can you point your phone down at your face a little bit so we can... Well, dude, hey, did you get the memo? We both got our four-wheel parts hats on.
Yep. Let me find a taller stool.
Yeah, exactly. So while you do that, I'm going to talk to people a little bit about our Baja 1000. So Jason just said, what's up, Max? Oh, there you go. That's perfect, dude. So how you feel after coming home, dude? I got a good picture of you. Let's see if I can pull it up on my phone. Of you sleeping after your stint, dude, on the trailer. That was pretty rad. These Baja 1000s are no joke, brother.
Yeah, it's such a long grind for everyone involved, and I did quite a bit of driving on the highway of my my own chase truck, and I tell you what, I hand it to all of our chase personnel. In my opinion, it's way gnarlier driving on those highways towing a trailer than it is us in the race car.
Yeah, I can vouch for that a little bit. Like, it's just crazy because everybody has to put in so much work, and not just the drivers, right? Like, your job was insanely hard, don't get me wrong, but every single person, I've never been behind the scenes that hard, and seeing how hard those guys work is phenomenal.
Yep. You know, we got to focus for 8 hours, 10 hours, however long. I was working hard for 12 hours. You know, and you got to focus pretty hard that entire time. But our pit crew was up for 40-plus hours. And to stay focused and coherent and knowing where you're at, it's harder than racing. I can tell you that much. I've done both now, and Jason is gnarly.
Yeah, dude, it's really gnarly. Yeah, Jason said that for Dusty Summit, said we almost died like five times on the highway. Dude, those highways are probably gnarlier than the race course.
Definitely, especially at night. Those semi trucks coming at you, and before you get to them, you're like staring at the white line to make sure you're far enough. You literally have a foot and a half of clearance between you and oncoming traffic on those highways. Gnarly.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, it's nuts. All right, well, let's get into it a little bit because we have so many people that are stacked on the show today, so we've decided to give everybody 15 minutes. Tell us how tired you were when I took this picture of you, man, because you were freaking smoked.
I think we were up for around 36 hours at that time, and yeah, Baja, you get a little nap in wherever you can. We're waiting for the car to come through, and we had an extra 30 minutes, so I figured I'd grab it.
Yeah, exactly, dude. You guys did a fantastic job, though. So your team, who I was with, was the Craig Scanlon 4-Wheel Parts team. We were together for, roughly 7 or 8 days. And, man, all of us had a great time just, you know, participating in the festivities in Mexico and Baja. But the logistical portion of it was Keith Redstrom and Brandon jumped in the car first to take it from, you know, the first third of the race. And then you and your nephew Austin both got in the car for the middle portion of the race. And then Craig Scanlon and Air Dog, Aaron Quintero, finished up the race. And we're going to try to talk about a little bit of the other stuff. But what was your duration of the course? Like, what did you see and feel?
You know, I got on a race mile 465, a Bay of LA turnoff, and I got off. And, you know, we felt good. I've done that section in the years past on the bike, factory Honda and Kawasaki. So I was pretty confident with my section. We pre-ran it a lot on the bike, 1,200 miles on brand new. We were dialed on our
mistake. Hey, Max, are you on Wi-Fi? Or are you on your cell phone?
On cell phone.
Do you have Wi-Fi there? Because it's kind of a little scratchy.
Yep. Yeah, let me take it inside. See if it
gets
better.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it's already better since you're talking right here. But yeah, so you got in at mile 465 and then you passed it off at race mile 840 or something like that, wasn't it?
860, yeah.
860, okay. So that's a pretty good stint. And your stint was pretty easy, as far as what it looked like for us, because you were able to get through it pretty well, man.
Yeah, you know, it's just it's all about doing your homework
Yeah, that sounds much better. Thank you.
And smooth and not beating up the equipment. You got 1,225 miles to do, and you got to take care of the equipment.
Yeah, 100%.
Just took it easy, and we had a little bit of downtime. Before we got in the car. So at that point, we just kind of turned our focus to getting that car to the finish line.
Yeah, you guys did a fantastic job, man. And I've never been to a race that's that long and that logistically, I don't know, heavy, if you call it. And to me, seeing all that, not just from our team, but like from every team that was out there, it was phenomenal for me to see that, because I always talk about the phrase, teamwork makes a dream work. But this is like another level, dude, because most of these guys have day jobs and they're just working their ass off to get one single car across the finish line. It's like the teamwork there and the amount of thought process that goes into making split decisions is insanely cool.
Yeah, it's tough enough to go down there and race and just get to the finish line, but to be competitive, you have to have a solid crew, and a lot of people will go down there. Yeah, let's go to Mexico. We'll go down there and have some cold drinks and eat a ton of tacos and relax. But there's nothing relaxed about the Baja 1000. It's a grind. You're working hard the whole time.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome to see, though. Was there certain things that you learned or you could even share maybe with some of our audience that could help them in their Baja 1000? Because I think the attrition rate was 30% finished, and the other ones unfortunately had to either end their race early or pick up their car the next day.
Yeah, you know, man, I don't really know what to say. It's just you got to be smooth and be on the equipment. A little bit of luck on your side and you can make it across that finish line.
Yeah, that's a really true statement. I saw a bunch of people getting really like aggressive and anxious, I guess you could say is a good word, out there. And unfortunately, they were tearing up their stuff pretty bad.
Yeah, we seen it firsthand. There was a couple of cars that checked out start in the side-by-side class and they weren't really nowhere to be found at the finish line. So there's definitely method to the madness. You don't want to go out too hard and break the equipment, but you don't want to go too slow and lose a ton of time either, to where you have to push the card hard for a podium spot, you know?
Yeah. And you think your experience helped a lot with that, keeping you calm and keeping you understanding how the car was going to be able to last?
Yeah, you know, like, and I'm new to the side-by-side stuff, so it's still a learning game for me, but you got 1,200 miles. You got two other guys got to get the car, and you got to hand that car off in perfect condition to the next driver. You know, so experience does come into it. You know, this was my 17th Baja 1000, and I've learned a lot over those 17 years on how to get to the finish line and how to be a team player and not only in the car but out of the car, making decisions on who to send in to retrieve a car, to fix it, or just get the car is part itself. You know, got a car that's 100 miles away, how do you get in there? How can you keep it moving, So there's a lot of factors that go into racing the Baja 1000, and obviously having good partners and not only drivers, but a good mechanic or mechanics in the car that can work on it and figure stuff out why they're in broken.
It looks like Max is having a little bit of audio issues, but he's totally right. And I'm going to show a picture of the whole team on the screen. I don't know if you guys can see this. Max can probably see it too, but this is the whole crew that he's talking about. Like, all of these guys went 1,227 miles to meet us at the finish line. It's pretty phenomenal.
Yep. Those guys are the reason why we're at the finish line.
Yeah, exactly. Every single one of these dudes worked their tail off, you know, whether they were flying a drone or just, you know, doing media stuff like me, or getting in behind the wheel and driving it like Max was. Or, dude, Austin did a fantastic job too, man. He killed it.
You know, I'm stoked. I was able to give him his opportunity to ride in a car at his first Baja 1000. He did do a good job. You know, we talked a lot during pre-running. And just like what's expected of him and stuff. And he nailed it. He did a good job. He didn't get us into no bind or let us come up on a marked danger.
Yeah, exactly. Savage Andy says, you got to bring Connor. He needs some Baja. Yeah, actually, I think Connor probably wants to do it on two wheels though, huh?
Sure. Connor will be in Baja at some point in his racing career for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Well, since we only got a few minutes left, what was your, I got two questions. First of all, I wanted you to be able to give a shout out to all the people that helped you, but what was the favorite part of your whole week there? Because we were there from Friday to basically Saturday.
Oh man, it's hard to explain. It's everything about going to Baja. The challenge is my favorite part. You know, and then of course, crossing that finish line, right on the, or you just made cross the finish line.
Yeah, I can agree with that, because I didn't realize how much it meant to cross the finish line. Actually, Wayne Matlock just joins the feed here. Austin said, and tacos. Yep, and tacos too. But when I saw Wayne down at the finish line, you know, he's already been Baja finisher for a long time, and I saw him down there, and I didn't realize like how much it meant to these guys, and the smile that they had on their faces. Like, some of these guys were almost getting to tears because they had worked so hard, their bodies were drained, and they just come across the finish line. Like, it is so phenomenal, the amount of effort, emotions, and just physical ability to get down to the starting line. It's badass. Or excuse me, to the finish line.
It's gnarly. You know, a lot of people have big hopes and dreams to go down there and win the Baja 1000, but just to go down there and finish the Baja, especially a run, is insane. It's a huge accomplishment
What's the difference between like a dirt bike and a side by side from your point of view?
A dirt bike. Your expectation to finish is probably 90. Probably to finish the Baja 1000 dirt bike. And in a four-wheel, maybe 50-50.
Yeah, that's true. Because there's a lot more that can happen, right, with all those moving parts.
Yep, and I'm grateful for all the guys that we had in the pit crew. Like I said, this was my 17th Baja 1000 and my 17th finish of the Baja 1000. I've never had a Baja 1000, and I give it to all the pit guys for sure.
Dude, that's so badass. And so this is like your kind of your first foray into the UTV stuff. Like you said, Craig Scanlon allowed you to, you know, come and co-drive his car with him and be a part of the team, of the 4Wheel Parts team. And now you're a factory Polaris Razor driver. Who else was able to help you to be able to accomplish the finish?
Oh, man. I brought five guys down. My best friends, Jay and Robbie, did an awesome job in our truck, and my brother was with us. So those guys are a huge help. But, you know, Craig Scanlon gave me my first opportunity, which I still don't know.
He saw something in you, man. You got to appreciate that.
And I give it all to him and Brett Carpenter, the ones that gave me the opportunity that I have now. And I told them that I won't let them down. I'll work my ass off until we're at where we want to be.
Yeah, exactly. So we have somebody else going to join us here. Let me see who's the next on the roster. But while we're waiting for them to join us, John Huppert said, what do you think of Jared, I don't know, Kazakria, Iron Manning in an RS1 P3 in the 3900 class? That's pretty rad. I didn't know about that. Did you?
Did not. Well, I knew they had that RS1 challenge thing going, and I've been racing an RS1, and I had my sights hope set on racing that RS1 challenge at the Baja 1000 this year until I ended up driving with Craig. So those hats off to those guys, to Iron Man. The 1000 in a single seat vehicle is totally badass.
Dude, it is totally badass. Phil Burton's going to come on in just a little bit here with us. But yeah, shout out to your RS1, dude. I love that car.
Yep. So we'll see. Hopefully there's some more RS1 in my future. And that's a super fun car to drive. But all those guys that Ironmanned it and finished it are gnarly.
Dude, bosses, right? I can only imagine. And I mean, you know how to do driving and stuff like that, especially with the rally races and stuff that you've done in the past. Oh, the X Travel guys just commented in. What's up, guys? Awesome work, Max Eddie and Scanlon Motorsports. Great work. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Hey, I saw you at the bar in Baja. Where at? Which bar?
Yeah, what bar?
Yeah, I don't think we might have been at a bar on a beach just hanging out or something. We were down definitely at the bar hanging out eating french fries down in Loretto. It was pretty fun. Man, it's so cool to see. How have you been feeling since you got back?
I got a little bit of rest on Sunday, and then Monday right back to work. I got some projects going on at home, and my car is bare frame right now, and we've January, so it's back to the grind. We're in full swing here getting this thing ready to go.
Sweet, man. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Max. We really appreciate it, dude. You did a kick-ass job down there, and man, I hope that you guys get another opportunity to do that, because I think you guys could definitely improve on some logistical stuff and maybe even, you know, get in the top three, get a podium at the Baja 1000 in a side-by-side.
I was just on the phone here today, and we got some big plans for next year. Spoil it. I'll explain all that, but I can't. George.
Yeah, thanks, homie. I appreciate it. And on a side note, I'm stoked, dude, for your little guy, Axel, to be riding a dirt bike now with training wheels. It's pretty badass. Keep it up. Keep giving all these guys their dirt life fun.
3 years old, he's already twisting the throttle.
I love to see that, man. Well, it's always good to see you with a smile on your face, dude, even after such a long run. So thank you very much. Really appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll catch up soon.
All right, George. Take care, man. Talk
to you. Thanks, homie. We'll see you later. Man, that is so cool. It's cool to see that Max is doing so well after such a freaking long race, man. It's neat to understand, like, I mean, he's done 17 of these. Like, could you imagine doing 17 of those long ass races? I mean, these races are so, so gnarly. It's crazy. Uh-oh, look who we got here. Max, we'll let you log off right now, buddy. We really appreciate it. But we got the Baja 1000 Pro Turbo. I don't know what you call it. Is it Pro Turbo or Pro Force Induction? Phil Blurton, he won that race by a mile compared to all the other side-by-side guys. What's up, Phil?
Going on.
Oh man, we're just stoked to be back, dude. It was pretty gnarly. You got back, what was it, Friday afternoon, Saturday morning, and then now all your stuff got back, and you said it's so gnarly unloading everything, right?
Yeah, we got back Saturday. A bunch of us flew out Saturday, and then the chase trucks all drove back, and one of our guys in the chase truck got sick, so they spent an extra day in San Felipe, and I had them picking up shocks and dropping shocks off for the mint, so they just finally made it back today.
Dude, so much going on, right? These last couple months of the 2021 season have been insane for you.
I feel like the whole season's been a roller coaster. You know, we never planned on even racing the Score Series going into the season here, and ended up doing all of them.
Well, so one thing that I wanted to say before we kind of get into the details of your race was, first of all, congratulations. And second, even more congratulations, because all the UTV guys did fantastic. If you're a finisher in the Baja 1000, you're a badass, right? But when you look at the numbers, which I have here in front of me, you can look at the time differences for your finish. You finished in 26 hours, 58 minutes, and 56 seconds and some change. That was just over 45 minutes ahead of the second place competitor. I mean, you did fantastic. Only one class one car or class 10 car beat you, and it was by 2 seconds. Is insane. Like, well, and first of all, I wish you could have made up that 2 seconds so we could be talking about us ahead of the class 10 cars, but yeah. Maybe next year, right? Like, dude, yeah. Like that pace and that the logistics behind something like that, like, I mean, give us a little bit of an insight onto what you guys were doing like during the race to be able to maintain that pace, because that's phenomenal, dude.
Yeah, you know, Bo normally co-drives with me, but he drove from 4:30 to 1,000. And then I did the beginning and the end, and we pre-ran a ton, and we just kind of knew the pace that we thought the cars could go. And we said, let's just kind of run this at a pre-run pace. I think Lambert went by us in the beginning, like on a mission, and he kind of checked out early in the race there. And then, you know, we had Austin Whalen and Schuler's car going with us for a while. And then Brandon Sims, man, we couldn't shake him for like 1,000 miles.
he was on fire. Oh, look, we got a little sneak attack from the dog right behind you.
I just got home, so I had to come greet him.
Oh, perfect. VIP.
He just turned 13.
Today?
No, a couple days ago.
Oh, right on. So happy birthday to the puppy.
He goes to the shop every day with me. But yeah, Sims was right there, but we pre-ran and we knew there was like this gnarly whoop section for like 70 miles at the end. And me and Bo were like, no matter what we do, we have to have a fresh car when we hit those whoops at the end. And then when I got back in the car at 1,000, I was like, I'm going to blow this thing up or win. Like, I do not want to get second place at this race. And so we kind of turned it up there. And then, I don't know, we ended up getting like some breathing room to where the last 100 miles, we were able to just kind of cruise to the finish.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy to see that, because when we were tracking everybody, like, it was really close up until, I think it was, like, right between 800 and 900 miles, and then, it started, like, gapping out a little bit there. So, like, what's the move? Is you really have to let the car, or save the car until then? Like, because I wasn't in any cars during the race, so I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really know what the move was, because we never raced a race this long before, but we just had a strategy in our head to just, like, keep that thing together until close to the end, and then battle at the end if we had to. You know, it's like you race a 1,226 miles. You get to mile 1,000 and you're like, oh, the race is almost over, but you still have like the Parker 250 to go, you know? So you still got,
yeah.
Like, I get back in the car and it's like, oh, it's almost over. No, we still really have like 6 hours left to go.
Exactly.
So, you know what I mean? And think about like a 250 mile race. You could have all sorts of issues just in a relatively short race, if you want to say. So I don't know. Our whole plan worked. Like, we didn't change a belt. We didn't change an air filter. We did
no way.
Tires. Yeah, we never did. We did four tires at one point. I clipped a couple things coming across a lake bed in the dust. And we just decided when Bo got in the car to do four tires at one time there. And besides that, I mean, a trophy truck nerfed Bo leaving a speed zone, like no siren, no nothing. And it broke the jack off the back of the car and broke the strap off the spare tire. So we pulled in and fixed that real quick and just threw like a dirt bike strap on there. I took the floor jack out of my Ford Raptor and just threw it on the floorboards for him. But I mean, like, relative, you know, for the grand scheme of things, for how long that race was, it really wasn't. It was pretty uneventful. At one point, I think like, I don't know, maybe like roughly mile 300 or something. It was Justin Lambert was still out. He got ahead up. He was through it, but a spec truck rolled in this canyon. And it was Austin Whalen, Schuler, a spec truck, and then me. And we sat there for like 25 minutes, just dead stopped.
Was that when Elliot Watson lost and it went down in that ditch?
No, I didn't see that though, too. It was before that.
Oh, man.
And, the spec truck that was in front of me, there was no way he could get around there. All of a sudden, you know, it's like 20 people out of nowhere in the middle of the desert show up to try to roll this truck over, and they couldn't pick it up. Well, Austin ended up burning in this crazy line that you could really only do probably in a UTV because it was narrow enough and four-wheel drive. And the dude in the spec truck was nice enough to move out of my way, and I shot up the hill after him. But it was like we went low range, and it was like a one-shot hill. Like you had to make it up it, or you were going to roll back down the other side.
Dude, that's gnarly. Well, at least you guys got through there, man, because that could have cost you a serious amount of time.
Yeah. I think it was just really the thing with the race was, like, I guess there was a lot of section in the dark for me. Bo's whole entire section was in the dark, and I thought it would spread out sooner, and it was, like, the first 430 miles, I was literally, I didn't have clean air one time the whole way through. And when the sun set, it was like my helmet kept fogging. You know, I was joking, oh, I'm mouth breathing too much, you know, and I ended up running my visor open for like 300 miles and just caking my eyes with dirt. But I don't know.
Yeah, just because you couldn't see anything?
Yeah.
Dude, that's so gnarly. Yeah, so what was some of the, like, the, I don't know, tips you would give to somebody like me? Like, let's just say I'm going to go race the Baja 1000 and it's a peninsula run in 2.5 years or 3 years from now. Like, because, dude, I wouldn't even know where to start.
Yeah, I mean, to me, everybody's like, oh, you pre-run so much. I think if you spend a big budget on pre-running, you know, like it makes you so much more comfortable on race day. You know, Bo and I, we ran everything in the daytime our first time down there, and then we went back down and we ran everything like time of day for the race. So if it was a section we were going to run in the dark, we came back and ran everything in the dark. That way there was just like no surprises during the race. Like Bo knew that there was going to be some fog in his section because he ran it at night. So it wasn't like there was no big eye openers for us in the race, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Well, we got to give a shout out to Brandon Sims then, because he didn't pre-run really at all. And he just went down there and just, I don't know, man. We were talking about it. I'm at IMG Motorsports, and I was talking about it with James, and I was telling him, like, Brandon is a boss because he didn't, like, he just went down there and drove it, man. Like, he's got to be so good at the natural car control, you know what I mean, to be able to do something like that.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you can do it. I think for the driver, it's just a level of comfort. Like, I don't know how much speed we actually gained by pre-running, but it's just like the comfort level in your head of like visually yep. knowing where all the pits are, like where everything's at, instead of seeing it for your first time on race day.
Yeah, not knowing where to go or whatever. Billy Slade said, what's up, fellas? Congrats, Phil, on the win.
And we went, you know, we went overkill on pit crew and support. And I had 27 pit crew members down there and 9 support trucks to make it all happen.
Hoo-wee. Yeah, that's good though, because that logistical portion I feel like is so important.
I just, my biggest fear in Mexico is like, I'm getting a bunch of buddies and friends to go down there with me, and I don't want them to be like having to speed down the highway and put me and them in danger the whole time. So I was like, yeah, I've got enough trucks to where I'm not worried about my buddies the whole time I'm racing.
Exactly. Dude, that's 100% true. We did the same thing. We had enough people to be able to just kind of get out in front of everything. So it was a lot more comfortable because you weren't racing to the next spot.
Yeah.
Dude, that's badass, man. I'm proud of you guys.
Bo, he was supposed to get out. And my other co-driver, Chris Williams, was supposed to get back in with me. And Bo pulls in the last pit and he's like, I'm not getting out, dude. And he unbuckled and he just slid over into the passenger seat and he rode all the way to the end with me too.
Nice. That's cool.
Yeah, he's like, no, we came this far, man. I'm not getting out. Like he radioed and I'm like, no, dude, you should get out. And then finally I'm like, he's not getting out of this thing. We need to be prepared for him to not leave the car.
He's stuck in there, right? Rusty Demon said, great job to you and the team. It's cool to see that a lot of people are supporting you guys, man. It was pretty gnarly to see everybody come across the finish line that did. The attrition rate was super low. I think it was 30% or something like that. So for you guys to come across, not only as a finisher, but as a winner, and the speed that you guys carried, you know, against all those other top level vehicles is phenomenal, dude. Like, you're on the forefront of leading this UTV industry, and we're really, really lucky to have you be a part of it. So I congratulate you, first of all, and I thank you for being that fast of a driver to show how good these UTVs are getting.
Yeah, it's fun. Yeah, I mean, it's cool. We went back and looked at like the last 10 years of finishing speeds and everything before we went into it. So I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know how much faster we get these cars to go, but it seems like we're getting them a little bit quicker each race.
Dude, it's insane. Well, you did a fantastic job, bud. So we really, really appreciate you coming on the show and just giving us a little bit of insight on the 1000 race itself. And man, you got to be proud of yourself. What's next? The Mint 400?
Yep. Car's back. All the parts are prepped. We're going to race the same car we just raced in 1000. Originally, we weren't going to.
Oh man, you guys are gonna have to hustle to get that thing.
Yeah, it'll be done. Bo's coming to the shop on Sunday and have some turkey on Thursday and get that thing done and go. The Mint 400, that's one race we've never won. We've got second like every time we've raced it. So
I feel like this is your year, buddy. You're doing so well, man. Keep the momentum rolling.
Hopefully.
All right, homie. Well, hey, like I said, congratulations on the win, dude. It was nothing less than a mission accomplished. So congratulations to you, Bo, and the whole entire team. I don't know everybody on your team, but, you know, like I said, congratulations to everybody because everybody deserves a pat on their back.
No, for sure.
All right, homie. We got about 30 seconds or so. Just throw a shout out to some of the people that helped you get there.
Oh, for sure. You know, Can-Am was the biggest supporter behind this. They've never won the 1,000 before. Monster Energy, BFG. If you race in Baja, I don't know how you're not racing on BFGs because they got crazy support down there. Vision Wheels, RV Travel World. Actually, I had Steve Hansen owns Hansen Trust Company. He pitched in a big portion to actually make this whole race happen for us, which was kind of a one race sponsorship deal. There's a ton of awesome people that have helped us for the last handful of years.
Yeah, dude. Well, thank you very much, like I said, for coming on the show, dude. And enjoy the time with your family for Thanksgiving, dude. We'll see you soon.
You guys too. Yep.
Later. Man. I mean, this is going to be a common thread, I think, for the whole night. Let's get Caden McCachran on here. But what's up, Caden? How are you, dude?
How are you, George?
What's up, guys?
Dude, we're doing fantastic. Hey, turn your volume down a little bit so it doesn't echo too much.
Should be good.
Okay, cool. We're good now. Hey, man. So, first of all, congratulations on all the success you've been having at the Works Racing Series. But we're talking about the Baja 1000 today. How was your Baja 1000, dude?
Our Baja 1000 was, in one word, long. It was fun. Yeah, it was all long. You know, it's a long race. I think our finishing time was 31 hours, which, of course, it's great you finished. But we wish we could have been a little faster to beat the guy you just had, Phil Blurton, before.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, he was on fire. So I got some of the split times here. He finished in 26 hours, 58 minutes, and 56 seconds. And it looks like you guys came – what place were you in here? Oh, it looks like you guys came across ninth, yeah. And it was 31 hours, 16 minutes, and 17 seconds. I mean, that's a five-hour difference. And you guys are all fast, right? Like, you guys can drive a UTV fast as anybody, right? But – when you have 1,227 miles, like, what makes that gap so big?
Yeah, it really is the mileage, because you see even, you know, UTV World Championships this year and a lot of other races, these UTVs are within, you know, minutes or seconds of each other at the finish. And I've only been doing the score series this year, but of course I pay attention to all the series. But, yeah, this race, man, we got to mile 30, and it was Lambert was first on the road. He started third. And Weiland was second, and Blurton was third, and we were fourth. And we got to mile 30, which is Ojos. And I could see Weiland and Blurton, and I'm like, I think we're going too fast. So yeah. You know, I slowed down quite a bit, and I think Phil did the same thing. I was able to get around him. But, you know, Lambert kept leaving us and leaving us and leaving us, and it was just like attrition, you know, just pre-run pace, what Phil said. You know, you got to slow yourself down because, you know, you're going over whoops, and you know the car can just blaze across them, no problem, but the car's got to go, you know, almost 1,300 miles, so you got to be really smart. And it's tough, but, yeah, it's just to make it there is awesome.
Yeah, and these UTVs, like, they've come such a long way, dude. Like, I mean, all these, like, a lot of people that watch the show, you know, we're dune people or enthusiasts, trail rides and stuff like that. Like, these cars are pretty, I don't want to say bulletproof, but pretty reliable, right? But when you put them at full race pace in the desert for 1,227 miles, like, it's a whole nother level, right?
Yeah, the team I raced with, Jagged X, the Schulers, they've been racing for, man, I don't even know how long. You know, UTVs, and they were the beginning of UTV racing, Polaris racing down, you know, up in the States and even down in Baja. And they could really tell you how far these have came. You know, I've only been around this for the last 3 years. But even in this last 3 years, I'm sure the pace has gotten, you know, way faster. And there's a bunch of dudes that are, you know, they have, you know, trophy truck team, you know, programs for a UTV. And, you know, you know, everything gets faster and faster every race and every year.
Who was your co-driver this year?
So this year I went from the start to race mile 633, which is a really long time. My girlfriend Haley Hine rode with me, and it was her first time in a race car. You know, she races Works, but her first time in a desert race in a race car, and she did awesome. And you know, I was proud of her because it's not easy, and it's a long way to go to get that car to 633.
What'd she say about it? Like, what was her reaction when she got out? Was she like, "That's the funnest thing ever," or was she like, "Holy crap, I'm not doing this again"?
We had started the race at 11 a.m. Well, we had gotten to staging at 9 a.m. We started the race at 11 a.m. we didn't get out of the car because we had issues until 6 a.m. Within 30 minutes of us getting out of the car, the sun came up. So when she got out and I got out, it was very quiet. And I don't know.
Oh, my God.
It was just very quiet. Not many words said back and forth. It was just kind of like time to sleep, you know, sleep for a little bit. But, you know, later on, you know, even today, you know, she enjoyed it and she loved it. And, she, you know, I think she wants to be back. We'll see. She hasn't really said those words exactly. But, you know, sure, if she gets to fight again, she'll come back. You know, it's Baja. It's off-road racing. You know, you get the bug and you don't want to leave.
Dude, that's so cool, man. Well, first of all, the opportunity for her to do that doesn't come along very much, but I caught a couple things. I caught, like, she probably doesn't, like, even know what to say because it was her first time and your guys' yeah. first time doing it together, but that's insane. You were in the car for that long, dude. Yeah. Was there anything that happened during the way, or were you guys pretty smooth sailing?
Yeah, so honestly, the first almost 300 miles were super smooth. You know, we were third on the road. Lambert was checked out. I was kind of hoping Weiland would go and, you know, be not smart and get away from us and break his car, but he was staying smart and staying close to us. I had Blurton, you know, 2 minutes behind me, a minute behind me, right on my butt most of the time, but I wasn't trying to pull away from him because I'm just trying to keep him behind him because I know he's super smart and he's going to get to the finish, and of course he won, but you know, I was just trying to be smart, and yeah, it's tough, and it's a long race.
So we got a couple comments come in. First of all, I want to say, like, you did an awesome job, dude. Like, congratulations. Cause yeah. like you said, you haven't been in the UTV game for that long. And, you got the opportunity to go with the Jagged X guys, which is a fantastic team and a fantastic operation with tons of experience. But you still, you know, managed it, that you managed it well, you managed it like a mature veteran. Like, it's so cool to see that. And, I think Caden Danbury, who just commented in, can, attest to that. He said, nice work, guys. You guys killed it. When I think you guys really did. John Huppers actually commented and said, heard race mile 900 to 1,000 was scary. It was like a trophy truck graveyard. Where would you didn't get in there, did you?
No, I think Brandon was in the car. Shuler was in the car at that point, and he'd have to attest for that one. But, you know, mile 1 to mile 1,227 is a graveyard. You see cars broken down all over, and it's a tough race, and it's not easy to finish. So just, you know, that was my first Baja 1000 ever racing, and just the finish is awesome. But, you know, I want to win, and I'm still bummed, and I've been bummed the last couple of days that we didn't win. But, yeah, his race is gnarly. And then thank you, Caden. I appreciate the words.
Yeah, but that's spoken like a true racer, right? I mean, like, you always want to win. I think you did really good, though, man. Like, well, we just talked about it right now, but, like, to have a finish at a race like that is phenomenal in its own right. But if you're going to go back and you're going to go through your head like a true racer, like I was saying, what would be some of the things that you would have changed or done better during the time that you were in the car?
A lot of the things we did correctly. For me, it was what Phil said again. He put a lot of effort and budget. He used the word budget into pre-running and, you know, taking your time in Baja. And for me, it was super difficult to try to get my pre-run miles in. I had, you know, the end of the work season was, you know, right there at the end of the year in October and November. So I really only had two good days of pre-running down there to get, you know, my section in. And, you know, it was tough. And all these races before the 400, the 500, and even San Felipe, you know, I've killed pre-running. And it was tough going into the race without knowing I had my you know, most of these other races, I can sit there in my head and drive race mile one, race mile two. You know, I could picture all these things. In this race, I just couldn't. And it was a bummer, but, you know, just makes me next year, you know, I know I need a pre-run. And I know I needed a pre-run more, but, it was just tough with the schedule. And other than that, man, I think we did a killer job. You know, it's so hard when you see, for me, it was Austin Weiland's dust. You know, always just wanting to catch him. And actually, we passed him for a good maybe 10 miles, but he came back around us, and I was just going to let him go. But it's so tough when you see the dust. You just want to catch him. But you got to realize it's not worth going to charge through the dust and, you know, beating up your car. And, you know, that was the main lesson learned.
So we were thinking about that. I was actually talking to, I'm at IMG Motorsports today, and James Hill's car is the one right behind me. I was talking to him a little bit about that. Like, what's the move when you go down to Baja and race this long of a race? And he goes, first thing, you don't battle with people, because at some point they're probably going to go faster than they need to, and they're going to break, and you're going to be the one that keeps going further. And I was like, dude, like, but to me, I don't know that. I've done short course the whole time, right? You just go balls to the wall and just give it as much gas as possible. So I would have probably made the wrong decision in that case. Like, so kudos to you for being mature enough to be able to just sit back and kind of wait for it and let it come to you.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. And even, yeah, you see, Weiland's dust ahead of me. Blurton's behind me. Blurton's pushing me into Austin in a way. And I'm trying to keep Phil behind me because I know if he's in my dust, maybe he makes a mistake or he, you know, loses it, which is would be rare for him. He loses it and tries to catch me and hurts his car. So there's all these things that you got to constantly thinking and drive the car, not make any mistakes. Don't hit a rock. You know, remember where your pits are. You can't miss a pit. And you just, all these things are going on. You just got to sit there and take it all in and slow down and drive.
Dude, it's so crazy, man. So that's like my first time ever going on a peninsula run. And like the logistical portion of it, like it was blowing my mind, first of all. But then to see like everybody work together and like have that team structure, like being part of the Jagged X crew, you must feel pretty confident in everybody's work ethic and the way that they're doing things in the program.
Absolutely. I think we had a, first of all, thanks to the Jagged X team, this whole year has been awesome. And, you know, not very many people get an opportunity like this. And it's really opened my eyes to desert racing and how awesome it is, especially Baja. You know, but going down to Baja, just experience it through my dad's one thing, but to go race it yourself and have all of those experiences is awesome. So yeah, thank you to the Schuler family and Jagged X. And we had, I believe, 16 Chase guys down there in four trucks, and all those guys, Polaris sent us with an engineer, and even, you know, Polaris for doing that, they have engineers and marketing managers and all those guys down there. So it's, you know, the people of the company are coming to witness Baja with us. And, you know, it's awesome to have all those people down there with you.
It is pretty cool, right? Yeah, I saw so many, like, friendly faces and stuff at the finish line, and I was like, they were, first of all, they were tired because they had been there for so long, but I was like, man, the whole industry is, like, coming together and watching all of these awesome people come through the finish, you know, from a pro-level driver all the way down to the mom-and-pop guys and just giving them all a pat on the back. It was so, like, comforting for the industry.
Yeah, that's definitely a race where you see the black and white checkered flag, and you better be proud of yourself and your team. Because it's not easy to get down there. The Baja 1000 is one thing, but the peninsula run, 1,227 miles. You know, it was 31 hours for the fastest trophy truck. Rob, my dad, he's in the room over there. It was 20 hours still. It's not a short race. Stop. It's not a short race. You know, it's very difficult. And just to get to the checkered flag is, you know, it's very difficult. And to get there, you just got to take it in and be an achievement. And that's something that's hard for me is, you know, I really want to win or at least podium and, to not sucks, and you know, you just want to win, but sometimes you just got to lean back and, you know, realize racing is racing, and that's what happens in racing.
And dude, you know, you're so young too, you have plenty of time to be able to do it. And I'm not like saying you shouldn't have won, because obviously you're a racer and you want to win, but like you did so well in your first peninsula run, like, and your first Baja 1000, just take it in, absorb it, and know the things that you're going to do better. I guarantee the night after the race, you probably hardly slept, even though you were tired, because you were counting every single mistake and everything that you could have done better.
Honestly, not even the night of the race. It's, you know, in the race car still, which is horrible. The worst thing you can do is like, dang it, man. Like, I wish just, you know, not that necessarily we did anything wrong, but just, you know, things happen. And yep, you wish those things just didn't happen, which you can't control and you have no control over. But it does suck. And I'm sure a lot of people here are, you know, that race the race or anything, they have the same thoughts, and you know, you're bummed, but you do got to take it in. That was an experience that you'll never forget.
Dude, 100%. Rusty says, congratulations on the finish. And then, Caden Danbury also said, so I need to take some classes from Caden. I've learned so much from him this year. Well, he's definitely a good teacher, man. And he's learned from another good teacher as well, who we're going to have on later in the show. We're going to talk a little bit about his victory. What was a couple of the things that you enjoyed outside of the racing that you experienced while you were down there? I mean, there's obviously fantastic tacos, fantastic beaches, and fantastic family down there. So give us some of the happy times that you were down there other than the racing.
So this being my first Baja 1000, you know, even all these other races, San Felipe, the 400, and the 500, they all stay in, you know, the main area of Ensenada, San Quintin, San Felipe, Valley T. This race, you know, goes so far south, and the furthest south I've ever been is Loretta with Cameron Steele on his Trail Emissions trip in 2017. And just, you know, you all these different cities and the people you see, it's insane, you know, that just you see all these different the places, the restaurants, the beaches, that how beautiful Baja is something that's incredible to me. And you know, the rural parts is the, you know, you go California or whatever, all the beaches are explored, and you know, there's just when you go to the beach in Baja, in a rural place in Baja, the shells that are in the beach, you know, all those shells, they're all taken out of out of California. You know, you don't see them anymore. It's all untouched in Baja, or mostly untouched. So that's something that's awesome. You know, you find the different taco spots. I'm sure you found a bunch of them, but you find all the spots, you know, all the restaurants and the families, and sometimes you're eating in a family's house at their dinner table, you know, that's where the restaurant is. And that's just awesome to me. It's so different. And anybody that's first time down there, it's probably got to shock them. Even for me, you know, I know what Baja is, but still it's different, you know, when you're further south. And yeah, the sheer length of the race allows that.
Dude, it was pretty cool though, like to see like all of those people down south too, man. It was like a totally different world. John Hupper said you never have enough stickers. That's totally true. San Ignacio and Loretto coming into La Paz is so epic. It really is, man. Dude, I don't remember where it was. I think it called like Mulahete or something like that. Okay. We went to RJ Anderson's going to join us real quick. But we went to like an untouched beach there that was insane.
Yeah. It's just, again, it's crazy. The cliffs you see, you know, the animals down in La Paz. Hey, RJ, down in La Paz.
What's up, buddy?
Sunday after
What's up, RJ?
We all went and swam with whale sharks, you know, and that's, I mean, you could probably do that in the States, but you know, it probably wouldn't be easy to find, or, you know, all the insurance things that would have to happen in the States. You know, we went and swam 5 feet away from these 30 foot long whale sharks, and it's just awesome.
Dude. Awesome. That's insane, really? RJ, did you swim with whale sharks this time?
I did not, dude. I just got dusty, used up, and headed home.
Yeah. Oh, look at Caden over here. He's swimming with whale sharks, making us look like retards, huh? Dude, that's so rad, man. All right, Caden. Well, hey, you did a fantastic job. We're going to talk to RJ a little bit about what he had going on, so I really appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us. It was awesome to see you down there doing so well, buddy.
Thank you. All right. I'll see you guys later.
Nice job, Caden.
Thank you. You too.
See you, buddy.
Sorry it didn't go the way you wanted it, but that's racing.
Oh, good. I'm more mad about the whale shark deal.
Yeah. You got to come to the fish, right? All right. On, see dude. You guys.
See ya.
All right. Later, Caden. Dude, that's pretty rad that he got to do some whale sharks. All right. Well, welcome RJ Anderson to our Baja 1000 recap show, dude. Man, you've been so busy over the last couple months. How did you get time to fit in a Baja 1000 Peninsula run?
Honestly, I didn't get enough time. I was a little disappointed. Pre-running is huge in Baja, and I think that's why like 80% of people do it. You know, just the people down there running the roads in Baja, eating the tacos, drinking the Tecates. It's all part of it, you know? And I only got to go down for 2 whole days this year. So normally I like to try to at least put 5 in. And this was the most miles I've ever done down in Baja. And I only pre-ran for 2 days. So that definitely bit me a little bit. I wish I could have done more, but hey, time's limited. It's been wild. You know, everyone's had a crazy year. It seems like events keep going later in the year. There's more and more every year. So I did not get near enough pre-run time in, but I got just enough to see almost my whole section. Of course, the gnarly part of my section I didn't get to see, but
yeah, figures, right? All right, so talk about being busy. Well, two things here. I'm going to mention one thing first. I got to ride home with your content guy Daniel, and he was sleeping pretty hard on my shoulder, dude. Pretty hard. I think I might have got some pretty much. I think it was, I don't know, between 69 and 70.
69.69.
Yep, exactly. So it was rad talking with him on the way home. But so System Solutions actually asked, are you ready for Camp Rager? So talking about events in late 2021, man, you got some other stuff happening too, so let's just crush that real quick.
Yeah, man, it's crazy. It doesn't slow down. Baja's come and gone. We got Thanksgiving weekend this weekend, so I'm stoked to have a weekend off, man. It's actually my dad's 60th birthday this weekend, so
ooh, happy birthday.
I'm headed out to the river. Got some family. Joey D is actually coming out there, so I'm stoked him and his family are coming. It'll be cool, just kind of celebrate my dad a little bit. He's done a lot for us, so the big 6-0. It'll be a cool weekend. One, I'm glad to just go have some fun, relax, take a breather, and then it's Mint 400. Be at the Mint 400 Thursday through Sunday, race day Saturday. So racing a class one also out there at the Mint. And then come back, go to Glamis a few days later, Camp Rager. And also this year there's a Red Bull race out in the dunes, which is going to be absolutely rowdy. Our group times their group is going to be probably a sight to see. So then my buddy's getting married the weekend after that, and it's Christmas. So 2022, here we come.
Exactly. That's a freaking stacked field, man, for the rest of the year. That's going to be so cool. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to miss that because I already have obligations in Texas to do some stuff, but that's going to be an awesome weekend in Glamis.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah, we were initially supposed to kind of go out to Texplex for that 12-hour deal. But a mix of Texas just absolutely whooping our butt all year, and then this race came about, so it kind of worked out, you know. And also, dude, it's third year Camp Ranger. I don't know what everyone thinks that they can stomp on my dates, you know, but it ain't going to work.
You're holding strong. The Dune and Destroy guys were asking, they were, let's see here, if you were registered to race that race.
Yeah, me and Ronnie are actually both going to do it. So, seems like kind of a free for all. I'm excited to see. I said I want to just come out there and I want to be like drive the wrecker, pick up broken razors, broken UTVs in general.
How rowdy you think it's going to get? I feel like it's going to be wicked. Yeah.
I think it's going to be absolutely out of hand rowdy. And just think how rowdy, you cruise Glamis at night on a big weekend and there's people scattered over those dunes and sand cars, UTVs, you name it. There's people scattered, stuck. Now you put a trophy up for grabs and you're going to see some carnage.
Yeah, exactly. Somebody saw you on the freeway in San Diego. So give a shout out to Daniel Gonza, I guess.
What's up, buddy? And, I wonder which way I was going because, long story short, on top of my Baja Chaos, dude, I went down there the first day to race week, and they turned me around at the border because I knew better, but I didn't have all my ducks in a row. I had my title for my trailer. I couldn't find the registration. I just had my title with me, and they turned me around for not having registration for my trailer.
Really?
So, dude, it was chaos. So, yeah. Long story short, dude. I turn around, get my registration in Riverside, and go back down.
Oh my God! So you had to go all the way back. That sucks, dude. Yes. You know what? Another thing that came up in Baja, Daniel told me that to start following this dude, White Claw Gabe, on Instagram. It's epic, epic.
Dude, White Claw Gabe's epic, baby.
Dude, I started watching him on the way home. Hey, have you ever heard of this thing called Florida Man?
I used to listen to a radio station back in the day, and it was always like Florida man dies from electrocuting himself with shopping cart. Like, is that what you're talking about?
So,
like, where you type in your birthday and Florida man?
Dude. All right. So tell your brother to type in the Florida man space his birthday on Google, and then it'll give you all the list of funny stuff. Dude, we were Florida man all weekend. So it's just like everything that happened to the car, we'd be like, yep, Florida man broke the front end.
Yeah, I don't know what's in their water down there, the Gulf water or something. I don't know.
It makes you go crazy, but it was fun. Bo Judge says, not to get off subject, but what about that battle we had the week before at the Works race? Did you guys battle pretty hard?
Dude, it was so fun. Yeah, it was great racing. I don't get out to Works anymore. And it's not that I don't necessarily want to. It's just, you know, time with all our schedule and racing Texas so much this year. But yeah, we had an awesome race. So both in short course, he's now showed me. I'm the short course guy, and he showed me how to race short course twice now. So
yeah, he said he need to replace his rear bumper.
yeah, exactly. I got to replace my front one too. So yeah, man, I that second race, I had a little bit of a mechanical. I have no idea what happened, but man, he also awesome driver. I know him and Phil. I don't get to race against those guys much, but definitely class acts in the UTV world.
And hey, speaking of racing,
so congrats to them for that,
dude. They crushed it so hard, man. They only won 10 car beat them, and that was by 2 seconds.
Dude, so funny. I stay off. People are always going to give UTVs, you know, flack on the internet, but the 10 car guys, dude, are hating so hard, dude.
I think it's because we're encroaching on their territory.
100%. That's all it could be. Because I think 10 cars are cool, and I race a bunch of different things. You know, I race trucks and UTVs and whatever. It's all cool. So, dude, the UTV guys are hating hard. I think they're bummed that there's so much sponsorship in UTVs, you know. So I was laughing. I told someone what's funny is, yeah, I don't know exactly. Phil and them were close to that lead 10 car. And their prep has got to be a tenth the cost because they actually have sponsors to help them cover the cost, you know?
Oh, that's a true statement, though.
Yeah, exactly. So, man, I think 10 cars are awesome. I think dudes that drive them are gnarly hardcore, but there's no hiding that UTVs are the way of the future.
Yeah, I agree 100%, especially with, we can talk about the Wayne Matlock car coming across finish. That was badass. But the Dune and Destroy guys, I mean, they keep commenting in that they want a RS1 race at the Red Bull race.
Dude, have they seen when me and Ronnie get out there in the RS1s? I don't know if they've
seen. Oh, yeah, when you guys cartwheeled each other or whatever it was.
We ran into each other and we had to fix our own cars, so I don't think you want any of this. Talk about Dune and Destroy.
Dude, those guys are just... You guys could get through the first turn and then just call it a day after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't think I'll be joining in on that.
Yeah, I know. That'd be so rowdy. All right. Wyatt Hastings commented in, RJ, what's the best way for an up and coming racer, to get their name out there? I've been going, at it for over 4 years now. And I've been racing in the pro class for 3 years now.
Man, the best, I had a call coming through, so I kind of missed it. So he was asking what's the best way to get your name out there? Is that what I got out of
it? Yeah, pretty much, yeah. And it sounds like he's been racing for a while, too, so.
Yeah, I mean, the best thing is just staying the course, you know. I have a lot of people that ask me, hey, I want to be a professional UTV racer. How do I become the next, the next big UTV racer? And it doesn't happen overnight. I think everyone expects that you go win a race, you get a sponsor, and bam, you're at the top of the game, you know. I've been racing for, I started about 15, 16 years ago in go-karts, and then I got into dirt stuff around 2007, so roughly 14 years ago. It just takes time. It takes, I raced 5-6 years before anyone even knew who I was or what I was doing. I got a little lucky. I was kind of at the forefront of the UTV side of things. It was just the timing at the time, you know. Yep. But if I could give advice on how to get your name out there, it's put in the results. Surround yourself with people that are better than you or smart and good at social media and all those things, you know. That's I think one thing I was able to do that I was good at is I surrounded myself with really good talented people from media aspect side of things to crew chief side of things to just my friends and people I associate with. I think that's what I was able to do right the most. If I can go back and pinpoint anything, is surround yourself with good people and just keep at it, you know. Make sure you go to those races that do have an impact and stay up to date with your sponsors and grow with them, you know. You're never going to go to a sponsor and sell them for a $100,000 deal when they don't know who you are. You know, you got to build together, you know. It might be a sticker and a discount at first, and then it might be free parts, and then it might be money later on, you know. But the biggest thing is just staying the course, working with the people that were with you when you started and growing with them together.
Dude, 100%. That's a lot to take in for somebody that might not have all that, but just eat the elephant one bite at a time, man, and just kind of work your way into it. RyanKing.tv says, why doesn't RJ have a TV series? Hey, little do you know, he's got a YouTube series, and it's funny as heck, man. So go check it out.
TV would be rad. I don't know if we could keep up with that. But we do the YouTube thing. It's, man, it's a lot of work just doing the YouTube thing on a weekly basis. Before I hopped on with you, I was actually doing some cover photo stuff. So, dude, it's a lot of work. Respect to people that are got big followings on YouTube and do the once-a-day vlogs and stuff. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah, please don't start an OnlyFans, dude. That's way too much work. MF for Musical Family said, loving the show from Australia. Thanks for joining us, bud. I really appreciate it. Yeah, and the Dune and Destroy guys, Wyatt Hastings said, thanks for the compliment. Caden Amberry, RJ is the hardest working racer I know. He worked hard to get where he is. And that's true, man. Like, I was just thinking about when you were saying all the stuff of being at the beginning of the UTV industry. That's like when UTVs were, I don't want to say like on the edge, but they weren't cool yet. So you didn't know where they were going to go. And then finally, like, they came through and they just saturated the market.
Yeah, I kind of came from like a motocross and racing background as well. So I kind of saw, you know, I never could have predicted what they are now, obviously, but I just loved them from the get-go, you know. And I saw the future, and I had people behind me like Craig Scanlon and Joey D that believed in my vision and what I saw, and just it kind of skyrocketed from there. So yeah, it takes a lot of hard work, you know. I think anyone that you see that's successful in racing works hard. It doesn't matter if they work hard at a job to be able to pay for their racing or work hard on their program to be able to race. It doesn't matter. I see people all the time like, oh, well, that guy has money, so that's why he's fast or beats me or blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. He had to work hard at his job to make that money the first time. So,
Dude, you're 100%. Yeah, you're 100% right. Jeff Proctor commented in. Yep. Exactly, RJ Anderson. Grow with your sponsors and be loyal. That's one of the things that I think people don't, you know, listen to a lot is just the loyalty, man. Chuck Cheek just joined us. What's up, Chuck? How are you, man? So one thing that I want to ask before Rob Mack joins us here is what were the best moment aside from the races that you had down in Baja?
Damn, I'm in a McCachern sandwich here, huh? That's
wait, were you? Was Kate? Let me see here. Yep, you were. Dude, yeah, that's how it goes. Oh, no, wait. You aren't. Rob that's Mack is heavy. Not. It's actually Joe Whining, Toby Price's co-driver, that's going to come on next. So I was wrong, but you're still kind of in a sandwich. It's just double meat.
Yeah. I'm just the lettuce at the top that no everyone goes off.
Oh, that's hilarious. But yeah, so what was you probably didn't eat any lettuce down in Baja. So what was your favorite thing down there other than the racing?
Dude, El Triero goes hard. If you haven't been to El Triero in Ensenada, that's my favorite spot. Only thing, tech tip, is you got to sometimes watch your stuff out front. There's people that know that that's the spot for the tourists. So El Triero, man. It's called, I think it stands for truck stop or the trucker or the truck stop or whatever. But coming down in Ensenada on your left, big semi truck, El Triero, best pastor tacos there is, hands down.
Dude, yeah, they're insane good. Did you guys have any funny things happen while you were down there?
Dude, Baja is always an adventure, man. Yeah, dude, I got in like a foot race with Robbie Gordon while I was down there pre running. It was wild.
Really? How does that even come about?
Dude. Somehow I broke down right before Catavina in the middle of absolute nowhere, like literally absolutely nowhere. And I thought we were screwed. Found an access road out to the highway, ended up at a cafe. As I was at the cafe sitting waiting for my chase guys to come back and get me, that we couldn't get in radio contact with. So we paid the owner of the cafe $100 to drive into town and tell our chase guy, hey, we're broken here. Max Gordon first came by, checked on us, made sure we were all good. Then Robbie Gordon came by his chase truck, checked on us, made sure we were all good. Somehow we met this dude that was running on foot from Tijuana to, I think he was going to Gonzaga Bay. I don't remember exactly where he was going, but he was going far on foot. And
what?
Where we were just happened to be the end of his stint. He was doing 50 kilometers a day on foot. And where we were just ended to happen to be the end of his stint for the day. And me and Robbie Gordon ran on foot with the guy to help finish his day's run. Dude, there was like 40 people there with him. It's a pretty rad story.
Dude, I want to see Instagram of that. That sounds insanely cool.
Yeah, I posted a little bit of the story on my Instagram a few weeks back. So catch up on the story.
That's so rad. All right, dude. Well, thank you very much. I mean, like, we always want to do better in Baja, but I still think it's cool that you went down there. You respected everybody down there, and you obviously had a good good time with the team.
Yeah, I mean, that's just how it goes. At the end of it, there's only one winner, you know? So we'll dust ourselves off and hopefully come back next year, have some fun, and make sure you tell Rob Mack I said congrats again.
Yeah, sounds good, dude. Daniel with the White Claw gave comments. all right, man. Well, we really appreciate you coming on and hanging out with us. We're going to talk with Joe Whining, Toby Price's co-driver here in a little bit. So I'll see you at the M400, bud.
Right on. I'll see you guys there.
Later. Man, it's so crazy to see like the little things that happen having a foot race with a guy that was running that far down Baja. Man, that was it's insanely cool. The stuff that goes on down in Mexico is pretty rad. We're gonna invite Joe Whining to come on here in just a second here. What's up, Joe? How are you, buddy?
Good, Georgie. How are you doing?
Dude, we're doing pretty good. Hey, so the Baja 1000, we've been having some pretty fun stories happen here. RJ Anderson was talking about having a foot race with Robbie Gordon just a second ago with a Mexican. It's insane, dude, all the fun stuff that happens down there, right?
Dude, Baja is magical, man. There's some, like you see, there's some weird stuff that goes on, and people on bicycles and just trekking from Tijuana to La Paz. And like you say, that guy running 50 meters a day, it's crazy.
It's not, well, and the... The freeways and the semis there are insanely crazy, dude. Like, those things just baffle my mind how gnarly those things are.
Yeah, those are some good truck drivers, for sure.
All right, so you got to participate with, what was it, Thunderstruck Motorsports? Is that how they pronounce the team name?
Yeah, Bryce Swain and the number 242 truck, Thunderstruck Motorsports. They built a brand new truck earlier this year, and they raced the Baja 400. Ended up third on the podium, and well, we went full bore into the thousand. So it was really neat. It was an honor to be able to team up with them and with Toby and try to make it happen.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. So how long it was, like how much of the production was that to get Toby over here? So you guys probably planned it for a couple months and then had Toby come in from Australia. And we're talking about Toby Price, obviously. And he asked if you could be his co-driver over there.
Correct. Like I say, Toby was in the States for a couple of months earlier this year doing some testing with KTM and stuff. And right around the time, September, the time of the Baja 400. And it all kind of developed there. And probably mid-October, Toby called and said, hey, I need somebody to ride with me for the 1,000. We're going to team up with Thunderstruck and try to make it to the finish. So I couldn't say no, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so Thunderstruck is a 6100 team, am I correct?
Correct. Yep, number 242.
Okay, cool. And then, so who were the who was on task to drive then for that team? It was you, Toby, for one section, and then who else was going?
Toby and I were starting. We were going to 372 right there, Catavina area. Elliot Watson and his navvy, Mario, were jumping in to do the middle section, and Bryce Swaim and his co-driver, Garrett, were going to take it to the finish.
Oh, okay, cool.
So, yeah, it came out pretty good. We knew that off the start, the fast guys that were starting were going to set a pretty hard pace. So they kind of made the choice to put Toby in the driver's seat off the start and try to stick with the fast pace or maybe even get in front of them and then just kind of hand the truck off throughout the rest of the trip.
How was it then? Did you guys have a pretty successful section?
Yeah. It was a lot of work. We ended up getting a punctured tire right around race mile 40, maybe 45. And there, you know, the race had just started, so everybody's still stacked up on each other. A couple people had got by us. And we made it out to the highway. And we had a chase crew sitting on the highway right about mile marker 70. And we made the call, let's get rid of the flat tire that we had on the truck and put a fresh one on. That way we have a complete set of tires ready to go again.
Yep. And
Toby just set to work, man. We set a pretty good pace and picked off one truck and another one and just
– yep.
Throughout the whole day, it was just nothing but dust. And
it really, do you guys drive into the night or were you guys just daytime stint?
Yeah, no, we were into the night about an hour and 15 minutes, maybe an hour and 20 minutes. And we finally ended up getting to where we were first on the road and first in class, right before Catavina, right when we came onto the highway, about 364.
Right.
Somewhere in that area. And it was kind of a sigh of relief. You know, we were trying to get it out front for the boys, you know what I mean, and to set them free. And we were able to do it, fortunately. And like I said, at 375, we handed the truck over to Elliot Watson and his navvy Mario, and they took it from there.
Yeah, Elliot did a pretty good job too, and Elliot's a fantastic driver as well. But yeah. You guys did run into a little bit of adversity throughout the middle of his section, right? In fact, it was online. It was kind of confusing to understand. So maybe give us a little bit of backstory, but I'll at least preface it is the truck that you guys were in. It, somehow Elliot had a mistake or whatever happened, and the truck ended up rolling down kind of into like a wash or ravine that you guys couldn't get it out of. So maybe give us a little bit of an understanding of what happened.
Well, like I say, Elliot, they got into their section, and the beginning of their section was that tractor trail that everybody was talking about, Fred's tractor trail. And anyhow, he'd clipped a rock with the left front tire, and it kind of shoved the truck off the edge of the trail. And Elliot saved it. He was able to get it pointed downhill and stopped. And it was still on all its tires and everything. And they tried to get back on the course, and they couldn't get back on the course. The truck was stuck. And they got the tow straps out, and they stood there and tried to get some help. And finally somebody stopped, hooked onto the tow strap, and fortunately Elliot jumped in and buckled up and had his helmet on and everything. And when the truck had tried to pull our truck, the Thunderstruck truck, out, it turned the truck sideways, broke the strap, and then the truck started to roll on its own.
Oh, and crap.
And it was just on such a steep embankment that, like I say, Elliot did a great job. He got it straightened out, and he got it to where it was safe, but he couldn't get it out of that position. And like I say, when the truck moved a little bit, it kind of went sideways, and then it rolled into this big ravine, and like I say, it was
seven. Dude, that's so gnarly. Yeah, even Tyler, a.k.a. Stanley, said that corner was brutal, so he could understand that too. Yeah, man, that's nuts. Sometimes, you know, like Baja just does that, right? Like, you can't avoid stuff like that. If it's just a matter of circumstance, I guess, right? But first of all, you guys still did a fantastic job. Congratulations. I mean, the whole team, they worked hard. But one thing that I saw that was pretty cool on your social media was that you and Toby got to give your young son Tyler, a ride in a pre-runner. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, my littlest, Tyler, he just turned, he's turning 9 here real soon. And our whole family lives in this ball stuff. You know, I'm out in the shop every day, and the kids are out here with me. And finally had the opportunity to take him down and experience a little bit of Baja and have some fun for a couple of days before pre-run, and then the real work began. And like I say, the last day before they left, Toby was able to fly in and get down into Ensenada. And we had probably 3 hours of daylight. And so let's go for a run real quick and just try to get some notes and do an initial shakedown on the truck. And like I say, Tyler was with us, so he jumped in, and it was fun. We had a blast. It was really neat for him to experience.
That was super cool. Was he pretty pumped up about it?
Yeah, he was excited. The section that we ran was really rough and tight. And he, from watching videos and just growing up and stuff, he's always experienced that it's fast. Desert racing's fast and wide open and going. And he mentioned that. He's like, wow, I didn't think it was this tight and this slow and this bumpy.
Yeah, he thought it was just wide open.
Correct. And there's, you know, of course, there's just sections of, especially Baja, you're only doing 15, 20 miles an hour in spots.
Yep.
You know, and you're lucky if you can make the turn. But then there's other spots you're doing 150 across the beach. So.
That's cool that he got to experience that, man. That's like a game changer, right? I mean, like, all of us as adults would love to go pre-running with a professional team, or even you know, sit in a passenger seat or whatever it is. And for him to get that opportunity at 9 years old is pretty fantastic, man. It must have just been smiles for days. I'm sure he's still talking about it today.
Yeah, oh, for sure. It was, he loved it. And it was kind of like, he just sat in the third seat and just kind of watched, and I was taking notes, and Toby was driving, and we were just doing our thing. And every once in a while, I'd look back there, and he's just smiling, happy, and it's you don't know, a lot of people can't ride in pre-runners,
right? Yeah, I get sick.
They start getting sick, motion sickness and this and that. And I told Tyler, just look out and look at the scenery and just keep your eyes forward. Don't look at what we're doing, just look out and keep an eye on what's going on. And he did great.
That's awesome. So cool, man. Yeah.
My wife and daughter were in Ensenada out goofing around and shopping and having a good old time. So it was neat.
That's perfect, man. And that's kind of the question I was going to end this little interview on, was this by asking, like, clearly the race didn't go as you guys wanted and Baja got you guys this kind of time, but you're going to go back. I'm sure you'll conquer it sooner or later. But what was one of the funnest things other than, you know, having Tyler with you in the pre-run that you guys experienced while you were down in Mexico?
You know, God, it's hard to put it all into one. You know what I mean? It's really, Toby and I had a limited amount of time to do our pre-running. So we were up from daybreak to 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock every day going hard.
Yeah.
Trying to get all of our notes. We had a bunch of good times there, but I would have to say during the race, just chasing people down on the run and,
yeah,
you know, driving through their dust and catching them and using the push to pass and things of that sort. That's the fun part about it, is actually catching people while they're on the run and we're, you know, obviously on a little bit faster pace. So that's always a good time.
Get your adrenaline pumping. Dude, that's so rad, man. I'm glad you guys had a good time and can take the positives away from it. It's gnarly that those things happen, but I'm glad that that you guys were able to get through it and everybody turned out safe, man. So congratulations on having a good time and all the success.
And that's like the main thing, you know, and we all got family to come home to and we're all down there to have a good time. And yeah, the stress and the racing and the adrenaline gets people worked up and gets things happening. But in the end, it's all about a good time.
Dude, 100%. Where did you get the best tacos at?
You know,
we found this place in CD Constitution. I don't know if that's the way you pronounce it, but oh my God, dude, it puts El Trilero to shame.
Oh really?
Oh my God, dude, it's so good.
We hit Mama Espinosa's down there in El Rosario.
Yep, that place.
A couple times, and that never disappoints.
That place was so good. All right, man. Well, I appreciate you taking the time and staying up late with us and taking the time from the family. Please tell Tyler and Yesenia and your daughter as well that we say hello, man. We really appreciate you taking the time and hanging out.
Awesome. Thanks for having me. That's good.
Yeah, absolutely, Joe. All right, homie. Well, we'll let you get back to work on that badass truck right behind you.
Yeah, it's a 6100. We're trying to get finished up here in the next couple of weeks. So move on to the next project.
Dude, sweet. All right, Joe, well, have some fun, dude. We really appreciate you coming on with us and hanging out, and I'm glad you guys are home safe.
Right on, Georgie. Thank you.
All right, we'll see you later, bud.
Bye.
All right, we're gonna try to get Rob Mack on here in a little bit talk to the big winner. He won the trophy truck class. Let's see here. Let's see if I can still get let's see. Oops. Let me see if I can get Rob going. Nope. Hang on, guys. Sorry about that. We'll get Rob on here and have a little bit of fun, man. They did a fantastic job. Rob actually won the Rob actually won the trophy truck class and the overall of the Baja 1000. So it'll be cool to get his understanding of what happened. There we go. Thanks, Caden. What's up, Rob Mack? How are you, buddy?
Just hanging out. Glad to be home from Baja, but enjoyed it down there a lot as well.
Yeah, hey, I know you got a busy schedule, so first of all, I wanted to say thank you very much for coming and joining us. Congratulations on the Baja 1000 victory, and man, you're even back to it already. I think you were actually in the truck today, too, weren't you?
Yeah, today, we got back from Baja yesterday, and then this morning, the truck was on a chassis dyno at Kevin Croyer's, and I basically just got back home about an hour ago from testing it for this weekend's Mint, or next weekend's Mint 400.
Dude, it's going to be insane. Well, I'll see you at the Mint 400. That'll be fun to do. But let's talk a little bit more about the Baja 1000. So this year you got to team up with the McMillans have a little bit of fun with those guys. I wore my four-wheel parts hat today just to congratulate you guys because you guys had a big old four-wheel parts sticker on the side of that bad boy. You know, how was it being part of their team, man? It looked like it was super fun and super good for you.
No, it was awesome. Earlier this year, Luke reached out to me and asked what I was doing for the 1000 and asked if I was interested in driving with them. And I think I thought about it for about 24 hours and decided, let's go for it, let's do it. So, you know, Luke reminds me a lot of myself. You know, he's super into racing, and he really dots all his I's and crosses his T's about everything. So, you know, I was obliged to and honored to be part of the McMillan team for the 1000. You know, I used to race against his dad, Mark, you know, in class one back in the late 80s. So we had our battles then. Luke and I have had some battles, but it was definitely a pleasure to team up with the McMillan family and you know, have success.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of crazy how things come full circle like that, right? Like you're battling one guy at one race, and then all of a sudden you're teaming up with him at a race a few years later, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
There's a bunch of people commenting in congratulations and stuff like that. And we, like I said, we want to congratulate you as well. This year was a pretty intense race. I know that you've done some Baja 1000s that were a little bit longer than this, but maybe take us through your portion of your segment of the event in the McMillan Trophy truck.
Yeah, well, when, you know, obviously with every time you race a Baja 1000, when it's over on Monday morning, you're pretty much thinking about what you can do better for the next one. You know, and I was doing that for my own program, and Luke was doing that with his program. And after we, you know, made a commitment to race with each other, you know, every time something came out, you know, any information about the 1000, typically, you know, Luke and I would reach out to each other and talk about it and strategize and trying to figure it out, you know, what the best scenario was. And as the map was released and, you know, the mileages were released, more and more of the strategy and the pit planning came out. And so when it came down to it, you know, Luke decided that I should start, go halfway, and he'd do the finish. Made it easier for us logistically, you know, for myself to pre-run up top. You know, Caden did some of the pre-running with me. He wasn't able to spend all the time, but, you know, just being down there pre-running everything that I'd done. And I think I went down three separate times, anywhere from about 4 or 5 days to 6, 7 days, just learning my section and strategizing and trying to figure everything out and where the place where to go fast and where to be slow and basically just try to figure out the best way to win the race.
Yeah, as much homework as possible. Oh, we got a couple comments coming in that said they would like your opinion on the all-wheel drive. So Luke's truck is a Mason all-wheel drive, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I got to drive his truck probably right after the Baja 500. We went to Plaster City or Barstow, excuse me, went out and drove it for about 20 miles. And, you know, it was very, very easy to drive. And I guess that's what I can say most about it. The all-wheel drives are easy to drive. They go faster without even trying. The truck, an analogy of it is, or an explanation is, the two-wheel drive, when you try to get out of the corner, you give it gas, spins the rear tires, and the ass end's all loose. So the all-wheel drive's opposite of that. You stand on the gas, and it pretty much straightens you out and pulls you straight through things. The truck's pretty badass. You know, it's got a Croyer Racing engines, over 1,000 horsepower, 5-speed extract transmission, you know, BF Goodrich tires, Fox shocks. You know, it's got, from what I understand, it's got the most electronic sensors on it of any truck that's been wired in the trophy truck class. So, you know, there's kind of little tricks here and there. The cruise control is pretty incredible, how easy it works, and mainly, you know, it's really a ton of fun to drive. But I had probably maybe 80 miles in it before the race. Felt pretty comfortable in it, but not completely comfortable. And not being my truck and things like that, I didn't want to, you know, make any mistakes. But, you know, you're going 80, feels like you're going 50. 100 feels like 80. And it's really, really fast from 30 to 110.
Really?
You don't even know you're going that fast. And it happens really easily. You know, a lot of times, and that's why when we were testing, you know, I'm like, man, it just, you know, like, I don't feel like I'm driving it hard enough. But Luke rode with me the very first time that I drove it. And he said, you know, look at the speedometer and look how fast you're going. And it's like, that, and also you really know how fast you're going when you try to slow down for a corner. In Barstow, I drove it. Basically, I was driving the same place that I test my truck, and I could tell pretty quickly by trying to slow down. All my braking points were off, and I would go through the corner, and I felt like a bonehead at the beginning with Luke. Here's the owner of the truck riding with me who asked me to go try to win the Baja 1000 with me, and you know, I'm blowing through the corners. But it took just a little bit of getting used to that and the speed. But ultimately, very easy to drive, very fun to drive.
Yeah, it looks like it's cool, man. Those things look like it, almost like you said, it's like, I don't know, for lack of a better term, like, it's like cheating, right? Like, it's like so easy to drive. It's like just telling you totally different things than what you're used to in a two-wheel drive.
Yeah, it did. You know, and I don't know, I had a really, the Baja 400, we finished third behind Bryce and Luke in my two-wheel drive truck, and I had a great day. No problems, felt really good, you know, the whole day, and Bryce beat me by 13 minutes, and Luke was 10 minutes ahead of me, and that was the beginning of me realizing, you know, I don't even know anymore. As many good all-wheel drive trucks that there are with the drivers that are in them, it's going to be pretty hard for a two-wheel drive guy to beat him unless, you know, that's what we all been saying for quite some time. It's going to take a while for the all-wheel drives to get reliable. But, you know, when Luke asked me to drive with him before the Baja 500, we were 100% going to race the two-wheel drive, his two-wheel drive truck. After he raced the 500, he pretty much said, no, I think we're going all-wheel drive.
Nice.
You know, and it was pretty much for sure after the 500. And then the 400, you know, I think he – maybe there was a little bit of question about which truck to go to. But, you know, in the end of the day – when we both thought about it and we figured, you know, there's going to be, you know, 6 to 10 all-wheel drive trucks at the Baja 1000, and the people that are in those trucks, if you're going to do battle with them right down to the finish, you definitely want to have the same, you know, type of vehicle they have, and, you know, to be able to get that win. And, you know, the truck, the other thing that Luke was learning, especially because of his brother, Dan had the all-wheel drive truck for maybe a year ahead. So Luke had some insight on the prep and the maintenance and the reliability of the truck. So I think that was another thing that convinced Luke to go all wheel drive at the 1000. Obviously, you know, he made the right choice. I know when I handed the truck over to him, you know, I said to him, you know, he got in the truck and they were changing the first, they changed the rear tires, then they went to, and changed the front tires. And when that happened, he was sitting there waiting and I had time to go talk to him. And I basically said to him, the truck is perfect. So I know that was good news to him, and he took off, and at that time, you know, we were second on the road, maybe third on time. Bryce had us on time, and it's possible Veloso had us on time there at Vizcayano, about mile 633. But instantly, you know, Luke started putting time on them, and Bryce and Andy lost a motor. And then every time that Luke went through a spot that we were timing, it was 7 minutes, and then 50 miles later it was 11, and then 50 miles later, it was 13 and 16, 19. It just kept growing and growing and growing all the way to the finish.
That's insane, man. It seems like like you said, it was perfect. Well, first of all, like I was thinking before, this is your fifth Baja 1000 win. So you must be pretty pumped and fired up on that to have such a, I don't know, a spectacular career with five Baja. And you're going to shoot for one next year, I'm sure, too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, it was 2007 with Mark Post was my first overall Baja 1000. And the feeling that, you know, that I got that overcame me at the finish line when the truck crossed the finish line was, I'd never felt that before. And it got me addicted to trying to win more. You know, we were trying to win them before that. But once you win one and get that feeling, it's like, I want that again. It took us until 14 to win again. That's the year that we raced with Jason Voss and Andy McMillan. 15, we won again with Andy, and then 16 with Jason. And then we struggled a little bit. You know, we always had good results or finishing close on the podium. I think we finished on the podium every year except 17 and 19. And then last year in 2020, Luke and I went 1-2. So, I think, you know, as many years I've raced the Baja 1000, you kind of figure out the recipe, what it takes. This Baja 1000, you know, Bryce started first. I started second. And, you know, the pace, you know, Bryce said before, he goes, remember, we're just going pre-running. And I go, I know, we're just going to pre-run. So, you know, the pace at the beginning it actually was quicker than I thought it should have been. And I hung with Bryce till about Valley de Trinidad. We went across the crossover road. And in my opinion, he probably picked up the pace a little bit, probably to get to his fuel pit, make sure I didn't get by him, or to get a gap, you know, in case he got a flat tire or something. But I just said, you know what, Rob, and I had this kind of little bit of anxiety and nervousness going on that I don't normally have before a race, but it being Luke's truck, and I actually felt like I had more pressure on myself. So, you know, I was wrestling in my head, you know, the last week pre-running and stuff, wrestling in my head, like, what am I going to do? And I realized, man, Rob, you're getting nervous. You're having anxiety, and just stop. And, you know, I said, you know how to do this. Just do what you do and it'll work out. So, at the beginning of the race, I just, you know, went about my own business, didn't worry about what anybody else was doing. And he basically got the truck to Luke in great shape, and he took off from there. And even at the finish line, and I know that they unloaded the truck and started taking the body panels off, and I think the truck is still ready to go.
Nice, man. That's so cool. That's kind of like we talked a little bit after the 500, and you were like, man, like we could just wash the truck, and it was your truck. We could just wash the truck and go race them next time. Like, it seems like things are getting a little bit more reliable. You guys are understanding a little bit more how to bring them to the finish line at a full race pace. Does that feel like the same with another team like Luke's?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, you know, back in the beginning of the trophy trucks in 1994, class eights prior to that, the trucks, you really had to take care of them to make them live. You had to take care of the tires. You had to take care of the brakes. You had to take care of the temperatures. And nowadays, you know, with all the technology, you know, Fox shocks, making bigger shocks, coolers on them, BF Goodrich tires, all the engineering that they've done, they've been making them better. You know, just really just about every brand that's involved in off-road racing, you know, have been improving their products and making stuff better. And it's really made across the board everything more reliable. So, and to this day, also, I'm amazed how fast we get to go across the desert and these things live. I've been fortunate enough to be with BF Goodrich since 1991. I've been able to take tire engineers out and give them a ride in the trucks and show them what they'll do. And the comments back from them are, this is what you guys do. You go through those rocks at 100 miles an hour. And I'm like, yeah, like, didn't you know that? And they're just like, I can't believe the tire can take this. But you know, with all their hard work and the technology, and also the other thing that's really helped in the years is, you know, the advancements in technology and products. You know, for instance, with the tires, you know, now there's new materials, new products. Same thing with shock oil, you know, across the board, everything, engine parts. You know, in 1992, we won class eight, but we were on 35-inch tall tires. Our plan was before the race was never take the engine RPM over 5,000 RPM. Well, today, whoa, no one says anything about that. You take it to the rev limiter shift and take it to the rev limiter shift, and it's supposed to live. So, you know, technology has really came a long ways over the years, and I'm very fortunate to and proud to be part of it and you know, really enjoy driving the trucks like that. It's pretty incredible.
It is. It's really incredible. And you brought the trucks, you've paved the way for a lot of this stuff along with other people. But I mean, you just mentioned right now, like there's hundreds of sensors on that new truck that you drove. So it actually, I don't know, it makes the complicated part is building it all, but it gives you all the ability to look at the data while you're going too. And with the experience that you have, it must be pretty nice to be able to know all of the stuff that's going on mentally.
Yeah. You know, at this point, the competition level is so high that, you know, you need to go pre-running, you need to take notes, and then your co-rider, your navigator, actually needs to be paying attention to the road and helping call out corners and so on and so forth. So they're not able to look at the gauges and monitor everything as much as they were in the past. But, you know, Kevin Croyer's got some pretty cool things coming to be able to send that information out to you know, the pit crew or anywhere in the United States. So you these things, the technology keeps advancing, you know, shock technology, Fox, you know, live valve stuff, and just so on and so forth. It's continually advancing, and it'll be interesting, you know, to see where it goes. Like, you know, what does the future hold? How fast will these trucks go? They're already going over 150 miles an hour.
Yep.
You know, 1227 miles and the truck looks like new. You know, it's really an amazing thing, but also where is it going to go? You know, how fast are, you know, is there actually still going to be a human being in them piloting them, you know, or will people be driving them from home with remote control? Who knows?
Dude, but, yeah, who knows?
Out of the question. I know shock technology is probably the next thing on the verge that's going to really explode and take it to another speed level. I think, you know, even though we have 1,100 horsepower, I know I'm asking for more. You know, I'd love to have, you know, 200 or 300 more.
Just to give yourself, it's so cool to see that you're asking. It actually brings up a lead in for me is we're going to go sit with the Geyser guys on Monday, and we're going to have a Dirt Life show over there at the Geyser shop in Phoenix, Arizona. And one of the questions I want to ask them is about the electric trophy truck. So that'll be a kind of a cool thing to talk with them about. But who knows what the future holds. Let me get through a couple of these comments here. Rob, let's see. Don't answer any of these just yet. Let me get through them real quick. 1600 make you a better TT driver. Rob will always tell you that the buggies help. one of the best short course drivers. Dude's an animal. We agree 100%. How fast were your pit stops and how much fuel did you go through during that whole 1,227 mile race?
Yeah, back to the 1600 car. Is the 1600 car taught you how to read the desert and use different parts of the road to make it go faster? And you had to drive the shit out of them to win. So that definitely, I think, helped me. I know, you know, Luke McMillan raced 1600 cars, and you know, a few other people did as well. But you know, the fuel stops, you know, we used a culmination of my team, pit crew people, and Luke's, and the Baja Fools did two of the pits, and I have video of our last pit. Took I believe it was only 45 gallons of gas and two rear tires, and Luke was in and out in 27 seconds. So that was
my gosh, really?
1,055, leading by about 27 minutes, and the Baja Fools pulled off a 27 second pit stop. I think when Luke and I changed drivers, they added about 85 gallons of gas, changed the rear tires, jacked up the back of the truck, changed the rear tires, and then went around the front and jacked up the front. I think we were there about 2 minutes doing that one. Also, a few other things happened at that pit. You know, pits are important. Strategy, that plays into the strategy. You don't want to get past in the pits. You want to try to gain positions in the pits. But, you know, the McMillan team as a whole down there at the Ball 1000, we had about 100 people. We had 7 fuel stops, a little bit more than we needed. You know, Luke thought it would be better to, you know, see the truck a little bit more often and pit it. And so we had 7 fuel stops. I think we had upwards of, 12 or 13 chase trucks with 2 to 4 guys in each one of them. And really just, you know, a ton of great volunteers. I really want to thank, you know, Luke McMillan for offering me to drive with him, the McMillan family. You know, what a legacy that is, to be part of, from Mark and Scott McMillan, Andy, Luke, Dan, you know, the whole family. They were awesome to me. You know, and definitely honored to race with Luke and get him his second win in a row at the Baja 1000. And then Luke helped get me my 5th win. And then on top of that, you know, I was also honored. Luke, he won the Baja 500 but had a penalty, so it took him out of the points championship. And it just so happened we were in 2nd going into this race in the points. So the McMillan family were gracious enough to let me put my number 11 on their truck to try to get a trophy truck championship this year. So we did. Thank you to the McMillan family. But
I thought that was so cool, man, to see that number 11 on that BF Goodrich white scheme. It like kind of like brings you back a little bit, but that was cool.
Yeah. There's a lot of jokes going on, but you know, what an honor for that. You know, some of the jokes were, you know, that's not 11, that's 2 ones. It's Luke was the number 1. And then, you know, I consider Luke and I co-trophy truck champions this year. He had an awesome year. He's had 11 podiums in a row, and that team has had 11 podiums in a row in trophy truck, you know, excluding the Baja 500 where they got DQ'd, but they won that race. So it's been quite an incredible feat. We've been talking about it. We didn't do the research, but I would have to say that there's never been a trophy truck team that's finished on the podium 11 times in a row.
Really? That's so cool, man. Isn't it crazy how those numbers all connect? I think about that stuff, like, aside from racing, all the time, man. It's neat to see that that structure. But it's pretty cool because it goes to show how much effort that every single person around you is putting in to make that success happen, right? Like, you can't ever discount those types of comments because it's all the people that are putting in the work to get those like achievements.
Yeah, it can't be done alone. It's always a team. And when I was young, and I know same with Luke, you know, our parents teaching us, you know, surround yourself with successful people, you know, want to strive and win as bad as you do. You know, people like Kevin Croyer, the guys at BF Goodrich, Fox Shocks, you know, a lot of these brands that are associated with us, they want to win as bad as we do. And at times they're pushing us. You know, we're tired of testing and, you know, we're done, but they come up with an idea and they keep pushing. Luke definitely has the drive, and I know he keeps racing. He's going to set some records on wins and so on and so forth, because with his demeanor towards off-road racing and to want to be successful, you know, it's going to happen for him. And again, I can't thank him enough for allowing me to race with him.
That's so cool, man. I like that you have respect and you're being humble about it, but you got to also obviously give yourself a bunch of credit too. So, we only got like 7 more minutes left here, but I wanted to, also ask you, you've been so busy for the last, portion of 2021. you're going to come up and race a Mint 400. Before you go out and do that, does driving a four-wheel drive trophy truck in the Baja 1000 change your mind on what you're going to do in the future? Does it give you any opportunity to think about maybe getting a four-wheel drive program put together?
Well, I can tell you after, you know, first time driving very close back-to-back was at the Baja 400. Raced, qualified, and then raced my truck on Saturday. And then Sunday I went out with Luke right back to where we qualified and drove his truck. And the first two things I did was I wanted to make sure I knew how that's a X-Track sequential transmission that you shift on the paddle on the steering wheel. And I wanted to make sure that I knew how to get it in reverse so I could back up. And The other thing I wanted to do, I wanted to use a speed limiter. So once I learned those things and felt comfortable, I wasn't going to make a mistake, get it stuck in gear or anything like that. I took off and went around the qualifying loop. And as soon as I hit the gas and went through the first straightaway that we had qualified on, I was like, wow, like, no wonder why I got beat by 13 to Bryce and 10 to Luke. But yeah, you know, the all-wheel drives, the savior for me always was saying that, you know, those guys, they're going to break. You know, they may get one here and one there, but the two-wheel drives are going to be more consistent and we're going to be there more often. Therefore, it's going to take some time. But it's proven that that's not the case. Right now, with all the Mason trucks are out there, and the teams that have them and the development that's happening, I see the trend that, you know, all-wheel drive is probably going to just about start winning every race, you know, especially in the Score Series. There's enough of them. You know, I don't know. Best in Desert up to this point hasn't had too many of those all-wheel drive trucks running them. But if you get, you know, more than five with the names that are in them, I think it's going to be hard for a two-wheel drive to beat them again. You know, my truck that I have doesn't have a big block in it. So, I mean, if you put a big block in mine, I'd have 200 more horsepower, and it definitely help. But, you know, I think more times than not, you know, when you're at the end of the battle, the end of the race, and you got to go do battle, you want to be in an all-wheel drive truck. So for my future, I'm not sure. I mean, I definitely, you know, haven't put an order in or anything like that. But you know, if I was ready to pull the trigger right now, I think that's the way you'd have to go. If you want to be, you know, be able to win any race you're entering, I think, you know, all-wheel drive is definitely where you're going to be. You need to.
Yeah, they're just so expensive, man. Mike Emerson commented in here, 613 gallons of VP fuel for them to finish the race, 12 drums, basically. Wow, that's insane, right?
Yeah, it's you know, again, you know, all the seven pits, they basically carry down, well, we pitting two trucks. So both Dan and Luke, you know, carrying, basically they're carrying four drums of fuel to every pit. So yeah, I don't know. I know Mike, you know, from VP Fuel, probably knows the exact amount of fuel that we used, but, I haven't heard back, but anyways, yeah, definitely burn a lot of fuel.
Dude, it's crazy. Caden's actually making fun on in some of these comments here. Hey, he said a Razor is all-wheel drive, just saying.
I see those Razors beating that Class 10 car, but I don't see him nowhere near a trophy truck yet. But
yeah,
someday, and I'm a Razor guy as well. Caden's, you know, races RS1 and works, and I'm impressed by how fast, how reliable, and for the cost of a Polaris Razor. We've got a couple four seaters and, you know, we have a ball with them and the maintenance. I feel like I've more than got my money out of them. And I've even been pre-rutting a couple times with them in Baja. And I know that new Pro R looks, you know, when I was talking to Wayne Matlock earlier before they came out and I was trying to get information out of them, what they are. And he was giving me little things here, little things there. And at the end of the conversation, I go, man, sounds like I want one of those for a pre-runner. And he'd be a great pre-runner. So
dude,
from what I've seen of them, you know, let alone good toy to have, I think, you know, pre-running and even race cars, it'll be interesting to see what happens in the future of the UTV class. And they keep getting bigger motors. They might be contending for overall.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we got 2 minutes left, but and Jeff Proctor is going to come on. So, Jeff, if you're watching, hang on. There's one last question that we want to ask. And again, congratulations, man. Five times Baja 1000 champion is a phenomenal feat. I really congratulate you on that. But people are asking, will the tire size get larger in the future? 42, 44?
Yeah, so no, I think they will. Actually, you know, I've been pushing for a bigger tire. You know, they already, BF already built a 42 1350 20 about probably 5 years ago or more. I think it was a little bit ahead of its time. Mm-hmm. I don't think the drivetrain was up to, you know, snuff yet, but now I think it is. I think the all-wheel drives could use more brakes. So I am pushing for a 42-20. Would be pretty cool. Get a little bit bigger brake package. And, you know, as time has gone on, like when I started racing, we were on a 35-12-50-15, and now we're on a 40. So I would definitely think with progress that you're going to see bigger tires in the future.
Dang, that's so crazy to even think about, man. All right, so I asked everybody else the same question. Aside from the race, winning the 2021 1,227-mile Baja 1000, what was your favorite part of going down there this year?
It's really just all the scenery, the sunsets, the sunrise. You know, I'm excited to wake up, you know, before the sun comes up and go sit wherever I'm at, whether I'm in Bay of L.A. or Catavina, you know, sunsets over on, you know, San Quintin side. Just the scenery, the cactus, the, you know, you can see the pictures on social media, but, you know, the sun setting and then, you know, it's completely dark and you see the cactuses, but you just see the outline of them. You can't see mm-hmm. what color they are, but just incredible things like that. The food, the people, you know, I've been going down there a lot of years and seeing the same, you know, little kid, you know, the parents saying, "Hey, could you hold our son, you know, take a picture with him." And then, you know, this is a true story. A couple of years ago, here I am in San Ignacio and at the hotel there, when I was down the race with Walker in the late 80s, there was a waiter and then he brought his son in to take a picture. Well, about 5 years ago, same place, and his son's no longer there. He's in La Paz and he's going to college and he plays baseball. And I end up getting to the finish line and his son shows up and says, "Remember me." And he was a tall young man. And it's like, I don't, but then he said, "My dad, San Ignacio." I'm like, wow, like, holy cow. So just over all the years, the fans, you know, it's a pleasure for me. You know, I'm coming home. We leave La Paz, I think Sunday morning, and I'm driving down the Malecon, leaving in a white truck. And, you know, I hear people on the side going, "Hey, Rob Mack," you know, so, you know, with all the years racing down there, I, you know, quite a few people down there know who I am.
Dude, that is so awesome. Rad, man. Well, Jeff Proctor's just on with us right now. Rob, you did a fantastic job, buddy. Congratulations on your fifth Baja 1000 win. You really did a fantastic job. And that story about the people down in Mexico is phenomenal, dude. We really appreciate you taking the time with us. And, hey, we'll see you at the Mint 400, buddy.
Yep, we'll be there. Thank you. Take care.
Thanks, Rob. See ya. Jeff Proctor, what's up, man? It's good to see you, dude.
Hey, George, how are things?
Man, I think they're better with you. You got Baja 1000 victory again and a little bit more for Team Honda too, dude. We'll call it the trifecta, right? You got the truck win, you got the Honda Talon normally aspirated win, and you got the Honda dirt bike across the finish line first this year, dude. Congratulations to the whole Honda team and you personally as well.
Yeah, for sure. Big shout out to Mark Samuel's team on the bike. You know, getting it across the finish line in P1, that was a huge accomplishment for those guys. And then for us in the four-wheel division, you know, I'm still kind of it's kind of a surreal feeling, to be honest with you, just to bring three race cars to the race and have two class wins. It's hard to kind of put my head around it right now, and I'm still kind of processing it all. But as you know, it takes an entire army to get down to that race with a ton of preparation and just a ton of effort from a whole host of people. And we're unbelievably stoked right now.
Yeah, I can only imagine, dude. Like, we just got done talking with Rob McCracken, and obviously he puts in a fantastic effort with that whole McMillan team to win a trophy truck race down there and an overall. But you brought three vehicles home, or no, four, actually, if you can include the dirt bike, not on your program, but as a Honda program. And that level of effort that it takes to get down there and to be able to do that, like, personally, me, this was my first Baja 1000 Peninsula run. I've never seen so much effort from all of the teams, and for yours to do three vehicles must have been phenomenal.
Yeah, you know, when you step back, I'm still kind of in recovery mode, and I hope to be the rest of this week, you know, kind of just processing it all and trying to recharge a little bit. But, you know, it's a solid 90-day effort at minimum.
Yeah.
Kind of planning all year for the race, but really crash course of 90 days to get the team ready to get down there for all three of our cars. And, you know, from logistics and fuel strategy and chase truck strategy and chase truck fuel strategy and, you know, just everything that goes into our pit books. And, you know, we had so much help from RPM Muffler and Pat Daly's crew and Evan Weller's crew, just everybody that comes together to help get these three Honda four-wheel vehicles across the finish line. It's really incredible the amount of logistics that go in. You know, we had, we took 18 barrels of BP racing fuel down to get these three cars across the finish line. And, you know, that in itself, just getting them across the border was challenging. You know, in addition to having, you know, you have four drivers and navigators per car. So that puts you at 24 drivers and navigators that you're managing on top of, the chase crews. So, you know, overall it's quite the feat to get a team down there, not to mention get across the finish line. And then on top of that, to bring a Honda two class wins, you know, we're super pumped.
Yeah, exactly. Ricky Brabeck, your Honda teammate, just joined us as well. So man, just to think about, well, you got two victories, just to think about the level of one victory. So you must've been pumped when you crossed the finish line. You're like, dude, yes, we did it, guys. And you had Alexander Rossi join you on in the driver's seat for a portion of the race. And obviously you had Evan Weller. Who was co-driving for Alexander?
Yeah, so the way we worked it is my full-time navigator and prep guy, Evan Weller, total stud. He's been with me for almost five seasons now. And we decided to have him also navigate for Alexander Rossi. So
oh, wow.
The first section, Evan and I hopped out of the truck, Richard from RPM, and Sashin got in. They took it to Alexander Rossi and Vizcaino, and then that gave Evan a break in the middle window, and then he got back in the truck with Alex in Vizcaino and took it to Laredo. So,
got it.
You know, Alex, you know, had what I believe is one of the best navigators in the business with Evan Weller, and I was happy to share my navigator with him and get him through his section.
That's pretty rad, man. It's so cool to see all the teamwork here. And so you had obviously a lot of people chasing all of the different vehicles that you had down there. You had two side-by-sides in the normally aspirated class and then the truck. How did you even like logistically plan that strategy? Because the side-by-sides were obviously quite a bit further behind.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the race truck had a chase crew and team, not a crew, but, you know, a definitely had their own strategy. The race truck did. And then the Talons had their own race strategy as well. And then each Talon had their own fuel strategy. So we had two different race strategies. We had a Ridgeline race strategy. We had a Talon race strategy. And then each of the three vehicles had their own fuel plan. So if a Talon fell behind or one vehicle fell behind, they were still getting fuel at all our stops. The team actually managed all of our fuel stops with help from, you know, the Seislip family, the Hanna family, and of course, you know, my team as well. So it's definitely a big Honda army that we have to assemble to get everybody together. And it's, you know, it's, I'm super appreciative for everyone that comes out and helps. I mean, this is a unique sport. We have a lot of volunteers, as you know, and, you know, we had at least 60 crew members on the team this year, and, you know, 90% of them are volunteer, and we just can't do this race without those volunteers and everybody that comes along to help. And
that's a lot of red shirts scattered along the Mexican Peninsula, right?
You know, at times it felt like herding cats, but honestly, our guys were on point all day, you know, didn't miss a single pit stop, you know, hitting all their marks in the pits. And, you know, to link, I always say, you know, it's one thing to get to the finish line of the ball in 1,000, but to link all nine pit stops together,
yeah,
successfully and win your class is, you know, kind of a whole nother ball game. And just grateful to all of our crew that came out and supported us in the pits.
Yeah, exactly. Dude, it's so neat to even think about it, man. It gives you a whole, like, another perspective. So each individual team has their own focus, right? So, like, I was with Craig Scanlon and his four-wheel parts team. We were down. Oh, Sharky said to tell you hello as well.
What's up, Sharky?
Down
in Mexico, just so you know. He's definitely the liaison to all the chase teams.
He did a fantastic job. I spent all my whole weekend with him, and he showed us. Have you ever ate pitaya?
I haven't. I can't say that I have.
So there, he went out and got these little things off a cactus. They look like a tomato, but they're like filled with spikes all over them from a cactus. You cut them open, and they taste like a strawberry.
Sharky, you're holding out on me, man. Come on.
Dude, yeah. I spent
5 days with him pre-running, and he didn't show me that, so.
Oh man, so I got lucky. Hey, thanks, Sharky. I appreciate it. But yeah, so just to like see all that and see each individual team have their own experiences. I mean, we've talked to five or six people tonight just about their Baja 1000, and it's just briefly over 15 minutes. So it's really hard to get the whole perspective. Like, but to everybody, every single person, win, lose, not finish, whatever it is, still comes back with a smile because of the people, the racing culture, the, you know, fantastic people that dedicate their, you know, time off to be able to go down there. It's such an interesting vibe, but it's such a cool thing to be able to be a part of.
Absolutely. I mean, Rob briefly touched on it a little bit. Baja is such a magical place, you know.
Yeah.
We talked about the sunrises and the sunsets, and that's one of my favorite things about Baja is that, you know, we're always up early in the morning and we burn the midnight oil, you know, pre-running and just preparing. And so you get to see these magical sunrises, you get to see these magical sunsets, and it's pretty stinking spectacular down there, you know. And then when you come to the people, I mean, you're in the middle of nowhere in the Baja Peninsula, and you come into a small town and you have all these kids that line the sides of the roads.
Yep.
With cardboard signs that say stickers, and you can't help but to stop your chase truck. As much as you want to be heading north and going home, we stop so many times through these small villages to just engage with these kids and give them stickers and, you know, thank them for their support. Basically, it's just an incredible experience to feel the energy and the enthusiasm from the Baja people.
Yeah, exactly. Joey D23 just joined us, and actually it made me think about something else too. When you said that giving the stickers to the kids. So Craig Scanlon actually brought a pretty good thing up to me when we were down there. And he said, why don't more teams bring blankets to the kids? And he started handing out blankets to all these kids and the families. I thought that was a fantastic idea. So maybe just a suggestion that we can mention on the show is any teams that are going to go down there in the future, if you have a little bit of extra budget in, put your logo on some blankets, man, and give it to some families down there. Because that was a really cool thing, man, to be able to keep some of those kids and their families warm.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. Obviously, Scanlon's such a salt of the earth, good guy. You know, Scanlon's also, Sharky was telling me, he's also known for, you know, when he's around a bunch of Baja kids, he'll gather them up and take them into the mini mart and let them buy whatever they want in the mini mart. I don't know if you know about that, but definitely.
Yeah, it's cool.
Cool that Craig does for the people down there. And it's definitely something for a lot of teams to follow suit and replicate. And I know that I'm definitely going to do it as well.
Yeah, exactly. Andy Jeremiah says, yeah, pay it forward. Baja pays us a lot forward and gives us a lot, so we should give back to it. Maybe take us a little bit through the race and some of the stuff that the people wouldn't have seen behind the scenes or on social media. I know that there was a lot of really nasty sections, a lot of, I guess, teeth-jarring sections, and you guys faced some adversity, I'm sure, along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. I can take you through the start of my race. It wasn't the race that may be seen from afar, but I can tell you kind of the behind the scenes. It was a tough race for me personally. It was one of those races where even though we got the win, you know, I never really found my groove in my section. And, you know, something was always kind of throwing off the groove that we were trying to find. But, you know, we started out the race, and obviously we start behind the 10 cars, and we were working our way through 10 car traffic and made it to Valley T. And all of a sudden, our truck starts bellowing out red smoke, or not red smoke, white smoke out of the exhaust pipes out the sides. And it's like, holy crap, we're 100 miles into the race and we're losing a motor. This can't be. This is the Baja 1000. And, you know, so Evan and I pulled over and he made a quick assessment, but our oil pressure was high and we had to, you know, kind of forge forward onto the crossover road at our pit at 155. And, you know, to make a long story short, oil pressure seemed to stay high, which means we weren't necessarily losing a motor, but we couldn't figure out why we were burning off so much oil. And we get to the pit and it turns out we'd lost a scavenge pump belt and our oil pump wasn't working. And so we were just burning it all off through the turbo. So we ended up getting the belt finished and, you know, rectified the situation and kept going. Lost a little bit of time, but kept soldiering on. And then along the coast, we come into the silt bed and we had this great line around the outside, around the silt bed. And we go to dip down to hit the VCP and you got to dip into the tail end of the silt and then head up this little embankment. There's all these photographers up there trying to get you through the silt bed. And all of a sudden, you know, we dip down and we lose an alternator belt and hitting the silt so hard. So we had to pull over and fix that. So we had kind of some challenges with our belts early on and, you know, Evan made quick work of that. And, So we got, you know, some guys got past us. We had to fight back to get past those guys again. Anyway, we ended up passing the same group of guys three times in 350 miles.
Oh.
That's not an ideal stint, to be honest with you. But if
oh my God, so much dust.
Is you've got to keep your head down and keep forging forward and stick to your plan. And it can be emotional at times. You get the highs and the lows. And, you know, we just kind of kept our head down and we started heading into the hills outside of San Quintin as the sun was setting and it became like Fall the Leader. And it was just blinding dust, no visibility, Fall the Leader up through the hills. That's not fun at all to kind of find your
nope. groove.
You're kind of in survival mode. And then in that final 50, going into race mile 350, just north of Catavina, gnarly, gnarly silt beds. We did our homework in the pre-run, had some really, really good lines there. One of our lines in a silt bed was far out left. And we had this really great line out left. And I remember going through that section and looking off to the right. And there's just a graveyard of silt off to the right of you could see lights of race cars that were stuck. And, we thought we were in P2 at that point with Dan Chamley in the lead, you know, class 7 champion. We pull into our pit. Richard Glasscheck got in and Evan and I got out. And then all of a sudden, 7 minutes later, as we're packing up our pit, Chamley goes by. So we must have passed him in the silt somewhere with a good pre-running line. And so we delivered the truck in P1 with a small lead. And, you know, from then on, you know, the guys, we had a plan. And Richard from RPM Muffler executed his stint perfectly, passed the truck and grew the lead, passed the truck off to Alexander Rossi and Vizcaino. He grew the lead. And then ultimately, Steve Henschfeld, as you know, he's actually a 13-time Baja champion now.
Nice.
Steve Henschfeld was our anchor leg and, you know, brought the truck to the finish line for us. And so, yeah, aside from my 350 eventful miles, you know, the rest of the guys on the team really just kind of followed our strategy the whole time and just clicked off miles and was conservative and got it to the finish line. And, you know, we couldn't be more happier, you know, with the Peninsula win and bringing home Honda Ridgeline's third Baja 1000 win in 7 years.
Dude, that's so cool, man. That's just when you say that and I hear all the drivers and stuff, I think about how much work and what all the chase truck and everybody's doing on the sidelines. To get a little bit off subject here, Alex MTZA, I don't know who that is, but he said, please talk about my truck, Jeff. My son would like to listen. His Mitsubishi truck is what he said. So you must have helped him or something, huh?
Yeah. So, hey, thanks, bud. It's great to hear from you. So on our pre-run, this is another cool Baja story. So Evan and I are pre-running. We're up in the hills of San Quintin. And we actually lost reverse in the pre-runner. We were looking for some alternative lines and got the pre-runner stuck in a pretty compromising position without reverse. And, you know, many of you know my pre-runner. It's not the lightest of pre-runners. You know, it's a steel cab, 99 F-150, pretty heavy truck. And we were stuck and dead in the water. We were going to be for a while. And, you know, our friend comes along in his all-wheel drive Mitsubishi truck heading up to the mine up in the canyon and offers to help us. And he spent a solid 30 minutes with his, you know, small to midsize all-wheel drive Mitsubishi truck, you know, pulling us out. And if it wasn't for him, Evan and I definitely would have been camping up that canyon that night. And
nice, man.
The beauty of Baja, everybody's just so eager to help. And it's just one big family out there. And, you know, I know if we came across somebody that needed help, we definitely return that favor as well. And, you know, they didn't want anything for it. We offered to help them with, you know, so many things. And they're just like, no, we're happy to help. And they gave us Coca-Cola and offered us beer. And, you know, they went on their way. So,
you know, dude, look at that. So,
and, you know, I can't thank the people of Baja just for loving the sport and supporting us.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so Alex, thank you. And thank your son too, because he wanted to hear about that story. That's pretty cool that you guys helped him, man. It's just that allure of Baja, man. Everybody is so helpful. Like I came home and I was so tired, like, cause we just gunned it home. Right. And didn't get any rest or anything. And I'm still smoked. I know you're smoked. Like everybody's got stuff to do, but, I can't stop smiling, dude.
Yeah. You know, the allure of Baja, I mean, that's what keeps coming, you know, bringing you back every year is that, it's just such a magical place. The energy down there from the people just really is motivating. And, And it's really the best place to race off-road in the world. You know, there's no doubt about it. There's some great American races, but there's nothing that beats racing down in Baja.
Yeah, exactly. All right. And then so let's quickly go over your pro driver, Elias Hanna. He won in the normally aspirated UTV class. And
Are we talking talons now?
Yeah, let's talk talons. How about that? Oh, there you go. All right, cool. That's a nice looking hat, man. So let's talk talons.
Two different divisions of American Honda. So this is Power Sports. The Ridgeline represents the auto division, so I have to be careful from a PR standpoint.
Oh, okay, good. Well, I'm glad that you're representing your sponsors properly, dude. So that's awesome. So if anybody else has any sponsorship questions for Jeff, I'm sure he can give you the really detailed information, like switching hats during the middle of the interview. Let's talk talons a little bit. So Elias Hanna came across the line first in the normally aspirated class. I think that's the first large Baja victory for the Talon, right?
You know, last year, Elliot Watson won driving a factory Talon for us in the Unlimited class.
Okay.
But so essentially the Talon's back-to-back Baja champs in two different classes. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're stoked for Elias. You know, a cool backstory to that. When I brought on Elias at the end of last year to race for us this season, you know, I came to him and I said, you know, I'm looking for a Baja specialist. And I had my sights set on him because he knows the Baja Peninsula so well. And,
yep.
You know, it's really his backyard. He's got a race shop down there, although he lives in San Diego. And I really felt like he'd be the guy to, you know, bring us that naturally aspirated win. And that's kind of the backstory to bringing on Elias. And it just feels so good for us to be able to bring home that win. And, you know, we had that plan going in and Elias being able to perfectly execute that plan all along. And it just, it's definitely a sweet victory for all of us here at the Proctor Racing Group and American Honda and the Talon.
Yeah. And did you guys do a little team debrief afterwards and you get a little bit of understanding how the Talon guys, both Zach and Elias did coming down through their race? Like maybe you could give us a little bit of detail on it or you guys have not done that debrief yet.
No, definitely. We're a big team for debriefs. You know, that's important for us to, you know, as a team owner to understand, you know, the needs of the driver, understand how equipment's holding up, you know, all those types of things. You know, unfortunately, Zach was running strong. He passed it off to Kelton Glaschek. And, you know, and unfortunately it was a racing incident, but, you know, Kelton had a little bit of an issue and, you know, a small crash that put us back pretty significantly, about 4 hours down from that crash, blew out a steering rack and, you know, wiped out the front arms. You know, our crew led by Dylan Keynes got in there and within 4 hours pulled out the front diff, replaced the steering rack, tidied up the front arms and got Zach moving. Zach, you know, that happened at about 470 and Zach was moving at a decent pace after that until about 900 when ultimately he succumbed to the injuries from the crash where we had some weak front arms that had some hairline cracks and ultimately it failed. So, you know, really bummed for Zach. He put a lot of effort in this race. He's been a great driver for us all year. And it just, that race didn't work out for him. So bummed for him. But then you have Elias Hanna came out and did exactly what he planned to do. Pre-ran a ton, put in his homework.
Yep.
Knows the Baja terrain. He's got a phenomenal Mexican crew behind him that helped supplement what we were doing. And perfectly executed race. He ran up front early on and was able to maintain that lead most of the race. he had a lot.
Yeah, we saw kind of a little bit of a little bit of leapfrog back and forth there for a little while, and then he kind of stretched it out.
Yeah, you know, it's no secret that the Pro NA class is ultra competitive. And, you know, you've got guys like Caden Wells and his Razor and Kristen Matlock that, you know, they're always a threat and they're always going to be there at the finish line for us. And it was no secret that this race that, you know, those are the guys that we were focused on and we needed to get past them and try to put a little bit of a gap. And, you know, there was some leapfrog early in the race. And then as the race went on, you know, Elias was able to kind of extend that lead once we got to Laredo. And when we got into Laredo, we noticed that his upper wishbones were starting to crack a little bit. We didn't want to take that risk of them failing. So we swapped out his upper wishbones in Laredo, But other than that, his Talon was perfect. And, you know, he finished under full power. The car looks perfect. I was looking at it in the race shop today. The car looks perfect right now. It could go run another 1,000 miles. And just can't say enough good things about this Talon. It's here to stay. I know direct drive, you know, dual clutch, DCT is really the wave of the future in side-by-sides. Sorry for you belt guys out there, but this is a game changer.
You guys have been doing pretty good, and in such a short-lived program, you guys have been around for a few years now, but you guys have been really making a name for yourself, so it's cool to see that. And I was just looking at some of the results sheet. It looks like Elias actually pulled a pretty big gap, I don't know, 45, 50 minutes towards the end there, and Caden Wells is no slouch, dude. That guy can wheel a vehicle, man. He can really do well. So, obviously, congratulations to him for getting second as well, but it's awesome to see that you guys had such success.
Yeah, a ton of respect for Caden Wells. He's definitely always a threat there in that NA class. And, you know, he's definitely he's a friend of mine, and I keep a close watch on him for obvious reasons. But he's definitely a threat at all those races, and just happy for Elias Hanna and this entire Honda team to get this talent a win.
Dude, 100%. So I asked all the other drivers and participants of the Baja 1000 this year what their favorite part of going down to Baja this year was, aside from racing. What was yours?
Oh, I kind of have to side with Rob Mack. It's Baja's a magical place when you take in the scenery and the sunrises and the sunsets. I think if you look at my phone, you've got all race cars and then you have landscape pictures.
Oh, dude, same here.
The landscape pictures, I need to share more of them, but it's pretty spectacular with the sun rising over the Sea of Cortez or the Pacific yep. Ocean with the silhouette of the, you know, the saguaro or the, what's that other kind of cactus that's in the Dr. Seuss books.
And they got palm trees, the whole deal, right? Yeah, we got to call Sharky up, man. I couldn't agree with you.
Definitely love that. And then, of course, you know, a close second is just the energy of the Baja people. They just absolutely love this sport. And it definitely fuels our fire to continue to keep racing down there because they're so passionate about it.
Dude, I couldn't agree with you more, man. It's so rad to see. Like, some of these pictures, dude, I'll never forget, man. It's so cool to have all that stuff come from – like I said, everybody came home with a smile, even though we're all just hosed right now, dude. Like, it's awesome. Well, thank you very much, dude. I really appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us. There's a lot of people that maybe you could just mention a few of the people that helped out to get you to the victory down there.
Gosh, I mean, obviously it goes without saying American Honda, you know, huge supporters of this four-wheel Honda effort. You know, American Power Sport or Honda Power Sports with the Talon, the auto division with the Ridgeline. And then it goes without saying that, you know, all the core components to a race team are really the team and the guys. You know, I want to thank Evan Weller for prepping a Ridgeline. It was a perfect, perfect truck for the race with his guy, Kevin, working on that, and AJ on the third members, and gosh, Dylan Keynes and Cole and Cody and Evan Arias in my shop on these Talons. Those guys put in countless hours to make sure that those Talons were perfect to get to the finish line. And, you know, beyond that, all the volunteer crew and everybody, we had crew members from Canada, Colorado, Arizona, Utah, California. I mean, just guys from everywhere to kind of help the cause. And it goes without saying that, you know, they're the real heroes. They chase for 30 to 40 hours straight. They hit all their marks in the pits, and, you know, we couldn't race in Baja without those volunteers.
Man, it's so cool to see that. And like you said, it's the camaraderie, the Baja spirit and everything that keeps everybody alive. I mean, we were sitting there with all of our crew and they had already been up for 30 something hours. And man, we just gave them some crackers and everybody's on their way, dude. They just loved it. So it's awesome to see. Andy Jeremio actually asked, is the same team racing the Mint?
Yeah, great question. So we have the Mint on schedule for 2022, the March 2022 Mint. You know, unfortunately, we weren't sure if the Mint was going to happen this year, and with it being so close to the Baja 1000 this last week, turning those three trucks around is going to be challenging. The other thing that I think is important for us is after my crew spends, you know, over a week down in Mexico, they're pretty smoked. And so I give them the entire week off for Thanksgiving to be with their families. And so I think it'd be kind of cruel to expect them to prep race cars and make the Mint this year. But we'll definitely be at the 2022 Mint in March.
Dude, that's totally fair, man. These guys work their tails off, and I'm glad that you guys all made it home safe and had such a good time down there, man. It was really good to see everybody down there having such a good time with smiles on their faces. So I really appreciate you taking the time with us, dude, and I hope you get some rest this week.
Thanks, George. Yeah, definitely looking to catch up on some rest for sure. It's taken a lot out of us to get these cars to the finish line, so much needed R&R. And then next Monday, we'll be focused on getting these cars and this team over to KOH at the end of January in 2022. So,
That's going to be fun.
2022 starts on Monday.
Yeah, that's going to be fun, man. Oh, actually, I had another question to ask. That was Erica Sachs. Actually, we had a joke going back and forth. What was the first thing you ate when you come back to the United States?
Oh, that's an easy one. All my guys know. When we come back from Mexico, we go straight to In-N-Out Burger.
Oh, boom. I love it, dude. Yep. Couldn't get more American than that, right?
That's right.
All right, buddy. Well, I really appreciate it. Please tell the whole crew that we appreciate all of this stuff that they did. And tell Adam I said hello, too.
Yeah, will do. Thanks, George, for having us. Always a pleasure to be on the show. And thanks to the Dirt Life show and all its fans. You guys are awesome. Yeah.
We really appreciate it, Jeff. All right, man. Go get some rest, dude. I really appreciate it. We'll see you later.
All right. Good night.
Man, it's so cool to be able to see every single one of the guys that was on the show tonight. They either have stuff going on or they were just smoked from being down in Baja all week. It's just awesome to be able to see the level of commitment and pursuing everything that they got going on, the perseverance and the smiles. I mean, like, you can't really ask for anything more. Like, I love the off-road community so much, and I'm so happy that I got to experience the Baja stuff with Scanlon Motorsports Group and all of the guys at 4 Wheel Parts and everybody down there. So thank you to all those guys that gave me the opportunity to go down there and hang out. Congratulations to all the teams that were able to finish, and good luck next year to the guys that weren't able to finish. I know you guys all went down there thinking you were going to win and just try hard, but I really, really think that that race is just so meaningful to everybody, especially the Mexican people. So we are going to have a show with Geyser Brothers at their shop in Phoenix, Arizona, November 29th, which is next Monday. So join us for that one. We really, really appreciate all you guys hanging out tonight. It's fantastic to catch up with everybody. We might even get a couple more people to join us and even have another one of these Baja recaps on Thursday, because so many people want to talk about their races. So, man, we love you guys. We'll see you either Thursday or Monday tonight.
Thanks for listening to The Dirt Life Show.